Stardate, December 26th. An experiment in solar energy. Stay with us.
Stardate is made possible through funding by the undergraduate students at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. It can be heard every night at midnight and every afternoon at 5:58 on WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate December 26th. The use of solar energy for electricity isn't widespread on the Earth, but it is for craft in outer space. NASA has used the sun's energy to power spacecraft since the dawn of the space age. Now, those solar energy systems, developed for NASA spacecraft, will be exported for experimental use in developing nations. Over the next 24 months, solar cell systems will be installed in many parts of Africa, South America, and India. They'll be used to increase the quality of life in those regions. For example, to provide electricity for medical centers, to pump water, or to mill grain. Experiments in solar energy make sense in developing nations where they don't have to compete with less expensive electric power produced here in the U.S. At the moment, solar energy is expensive due to the high cost of solar cells, which convert the sunlight into electricity. But solar cells are much less expensive now than they were a few years ago. Through advanced technology and mass production techniques, they'll go down in cost even more. The millions of isolated villages in developing countries represent a vast potential market for solar energy systems, one that could lead us all into the age of mass-produced solar energy hardware. Solar proponents think that would be great, since solar energy systems are silent, non-polluting, easy to maintain, and available wherever the sun shines. For December the 26th, that's Stardate. Our show is written each day by Deborah Bird, and we produce it for the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. In Austin, zip 78712. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Tune to the voice of Long Island. And and a special edition tonight and next week as well.
Sort of a catch-up on what you might have missed over the past year with the Voice of Long Island, Radio Free Long Island, Radio Free Weekend, whatever this program has been called.
Well,
through a lot.
One thing's for certain, you've always been Eric Corley.
And you've always been Mike Juhas.
And I don't think I'm ever going to change.
And we've always been here at the same time.
That's right. What time is it?
It's about Friday night, Saturday morning, something like that.
A few minutes after the hour of mid. That theme song you just heard, we've explained this before, but we very rarely run it the whole thing in its entirety.
Without talking over it.
Yeah. I don't know who the original composition... it's late. I don't know who the original composer that was, but it was performed by our own Andy Lisch.
That's right. And I think it was very well done. The thing is, we found that in some form in the station, and we thought it was off some record somewhere. And we asked you folks, who is this person? Who are these artists?
And that's probably why we didn't get any response, because nobody knew it was Andy Lisch.
Well, a few people tried, but nobody, you know, could figure that out. But
yeah.
It was, in fact, Andy Lisch. And we were very surprised to find that out, that the composer or the artist, whatever, was right in our midst.
For all five tracks, no less.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But we have lots of other things on this program that we're going to be going over tonight.
Tonight is kind of like the first of two best of series of programs.
That's right. Best of all sorts of things we've done. Interviews, sketches, Tripod Family, Sidney Shriver, I understand, next week.
Yeah.
A bunch of things.
Funky and Spunky, a bunch of just other things that happen to happen, you know?
Maybe we should explain what the ideals of this program were or still are.
Are there any?
I thought there were when we started, anyway. Well, when we got together for the first program, which was February, do you remember the exact date?
Yeah, February...
It wasn't Valentine's Day, was it? I know
I
one of
it
our
might
shows
have been.
Was.
It might have been. It might have been the 7th.
I think it was the 7th.
I think
February
it was the
7th,
yes.
We've almost been on the air for an entire year now doing this program. We first got together and called it Radio Free Long Island. We just decided to...
change it to Radio Free Weekend, and that got confusing because they started calling the entire weekend the Radio Free Weekend.
Which it still is, by the way, and
so
we're a part of it.
Now, yes, we're the voice
of Long Island.
And don't call us up tonight because we are, in fact, on tape through the miracle of modern technology.
We certainly are.
We won't accept your collect phone calls tonight.
That is for certain. But we did have certain... expectations, certain goals, well, certain things just to shoot for when we started the program.
Yeah.
Haven't reached them yet, but we're getting there.
Well, we reached quite a few, actually.
We've
introduced the tripods to Long Island.
Yeah, we've brought them over here.
We've also brought Bunky and Spunky out of the closet.
At last, at long last.
Yeah.
We've talked to some people like Curtis Sliwa, the founder of the Guardian Angels, the leader of the Guardian Angels, and someone we'd like to congratulate for getting married. I believe it was last night.
Was it last night?
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
Congratulations, Curtis Sliwa. And your wife, of course.
Oh,
Lisa.
Yes. I believe I spoke to her, too, when I first called him.
Oh, really?
I think she answered the phone.
Gosh.
Yeah. You see, they work together.
I guess that's how they met.
Later on tonight, we'll be speaking to Deborah Burnham.
And I hope that doesn't mean that since we work together, we're going to get married.
I don't think so.
Phew.
Anyway, most people get married these days tend to get divorced anyway, so...
Yeah, what is it, 50%?
About that. They're thinking of installing some sort of a statement in the marriage vows so people understand what they're getting into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you mentioned Deborah Bird, by the way.
We will be getting to Deborah Bird later on.
I wonder if she's divorced by now.
In case you don't know who Deborah Bird is...
Jeez. Well, you just heard Stardate, and at the end of every Stardate, you hear Joel Block mention who it was written by.
That's right. Deborah Bird writes Stardate each and every day of the year.
365 days a year.
365 and a quarter days a year.
52 weeks a year.
24 hours a day.
Yeah, she spends every waking and even sleeping hour writing Stardate.
So that's sort of what Radio Free Long Island, Voice of Long Island, or whatever, is all about. We believe in talking to people of any caliber, anywhere. We believe the human mind is capable of virtually anything.
It certainly is.
And we've proven that is how decadent and low the human mind can possibly sink.
And then again, we've seen some other striking things.
We certainly have.
That demonstrates just the opposite.
The opposite. Sort of like that.
Yeah.
Some of what you hear tonight may be kind of interesting. Some of it may strike you as being shocking.
Or revolting, yes.
Or things like that. We'll be playing, to start with, our first ever rap.
Yeah.
It's, in case you're not in the radio business, a rap is exactly what we're doing right now, in fact.
We're rapping, man.
You know? We'll be doing that. The first one ever to go over the airwaves on our program, which may not be of much interest to many people, but it is of interest to those who have followed this program from the start.
You, the radio fan.
Yeah. We'll also be getting to other things. All sorts of little surprises, some big surprises, too. We have a couple of special guests who are going to be stumbling in here and stumbling out.
That's a good way of saying it.
Well, it's true.
Yes.
A couple of them really did stumble in here.
That's very true.
In fact, we're still being sued for a couple of...
Well, who was it? That lumberjack who stumbled all over everything?
Yeah.
Who broke our tape deck?
Are we liable for mentioning things on the air? I think maybe we shouldn't do that because it might be used as evidence against us in the court of law.
Yeah.
So we're going to be getting to that and many other things. Mike said before, don't call up, but you can call up because somebody's got to be here, right?
Yeah, and whoever that person is, we'll be more than happy to speak with you.
That is correct.
And it may not be one of us, but then again, it may be one of us. Who knows?
So sit back, relax, and take it all in.
From time to time, we have special guests drop in. You recall a few weeks ago we had Mr. Harvey Hunter, the great actor and playwright. But today we have Mr. Roger.
Yes, that's right.
And you're here to discuss certain inequities in the American justice system as discrimination towards people of your caliber.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr.
That's...
Oh, it's...
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I guess many of our listeners are wondering how a man like you got a name like yours.
Well, yeah, I figured you'd probably ask me that question like nearly everybody I run into has to ask me that question. I guess it's just because they don't know of people with names like mine, but I'd like to assure the people that we do exist.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, where did you come from?
Okay, well, my family is of Monrovian descent. Mm-hmm. The family tree has been traced all the way back to Pierre and Edna.
Ooh.
And that was back in the medieval days.
Mm-hmm. I see. And are there many of the family left today?
Well, it's nothing like it used to be, but in the metropolitan area alone, I believe there are still three members of their clan. That would be if I have my... figures. Let me just check here. Yes, Joshua of Long Beach, Tony from Floral Park, and there's one more I don't have here. She lives in Canarsie. Let me just think a second. Oh, yes, that's Cecilia.
Oh, Gesundheit.
Excuse me?
Didn't you just cough?
Oh, no, that's her name, you see. She got married, and she wanted to keep her maiden name, so she combined the two, you see. No, you're thinking of a family in Columbus, Ohio. We have nothing to do with them.
Oh, so you're not related?
No, not at all.
But you're familiar with them, though.
Yes, well, we do try to keep track of one another.
I see. More on
that
later.
We do have a common interest, you know.
Yeah, more on that later.
Okay.
Let me get right to the point of this whole thing. According to the information I have here, you asked to be a guest on this program so that you could speak out against the injustices which a family such as the family must cope with from day to day.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, and before we go any further, could you just explain to us what those injustices might be?
Oh, I'd be glad to. For one thing, the state of New York will not give a driver's license to either myself or my wife.
Mrs. What's her first name?
Her first name is Judith.
Judith?
Yes.
Okay.
You have a slight accent, I believe.
Yes, Eastern European.
Okay. The clerk at the office said that our last name was, and this is a quote, ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, and in addition...
I wonder what her name was.
In addition, I can't get a library card. My kids are unable to register for school, and I can't even get a listing in the telephone book.
I see.
And we just about had it up to here.
Oh, well, of course I realize what a terrible inconvenience this must be towards people like you. But at the same time, I can see how a name like yours kind of goes against the grain of society. It sounds like you're plotting to overthrow the government or something. How exactly do you plan?
Let me assure you, Mike, that people with names such as are among the most conservative people in the country.
Really?
I voted for Ronald Reagan. My wife did too. My kids carry flags on their briefcases, except they don't go to school because the schools won't let them.
Yeah, but you're planning on changing things here. Being liberal in the
well, it's time
to get yourself
it's time for
accepted
a change.
Into society.
Yeah, it's time for a change because we have been literally hiding under rocks for the past 200 since this nation has been founded. We have been hiding.
You mean there have been oops since then?
We've existed since the barbarian age. Before then, even since the time of Christ, I believe we've been around.
Well, how
all
you,
over the place?
How are you just going to go about getting things changed?
Well, lobbying, I feel, is the most effective way. It's really, I think, the only way, especially in a country such as ours. Now, what I've done is I've organized a nationwide coalition of families with central offices in Washington, D.C., and we have quite a list. I could go on for hours listing the families. it's really staggering.
I see.
A lot of common names, which most people probably wouldn't even think of as common.
Like,
are, yes.
In fact, my neighbor's name is...
Oh, then you do know people.
A few. He's rather reclusive, though.
Lots of times, some of us tend to be like that, and it's really a shame because we can be the most diverse people in this country, one of the most diverse groups anyway.
Do you find you have common interests? Or do you have share interests with any of the general populace?
Well, we like the same things they like. We like to watch tennis on television.
You go to baseball games?
Baseball games we go to.
What's your favorite team?
My favorite team is the Cincinnati Reds, in fact. And also, I might add, the oldest team in the baseball leagues.
Are there any baseball players with these funny names?
I believe there are some in the minor leagues. Now, you may think that the reason they haven't advanced is because their name provides a handicap to them. Let me tell you something, Mike.
Or do they change their names?
Some people do change their names. I really can't vouch for that at all. But the name in no way is an indication of the ability of the player or of the ability of the average person. People with names like ours have gone on to invent incredible things.
Really?
Really. The plaster wall, for instance, was invented by a sand, and that was, I believe, in 1857. No, I have to check on that, though.
We can look that up in our almanac.
Okay, you can do that, then. We have contributed to this society just as much as any other group, and I think in this time when everyone's demanding their rights, it's just about time for us to do the same thing, in a peaceful way, of course, but, I mean, of all the groups, I think we've been put upon the most. I want to say thank you for giving me this opportunity to voice this. No one else does. I've tried to get interviews with Eyewitness News and all sorts of things. The cable news network wouldn't even let me on. You know the kind of weirdos they have.
Yeah.
Tom Snyder laughed at me for 3 minutes on the phone. I lost my dime. It was unbelievable. But I have to say, I'm glad that there
well,
is a
now
radio
I have,
station.
Before you go, I have this. One last question. Yeah, you consider yourself a minority
yes,
in American
yes.
society. About how many of the of these of you are there?
Well, it's hard to say, really, because if you go around and ask people names like that, they'll usually, as we mentioned before, will come up with a phony name only because they don't like to start having people laugh at you.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of tragic. People are hiding their true identities.
It's somewhat of a silent majority.
A very silent majority. They don't say a word lots of times. They just become total recluses. And I'm trying to bring them out. And hopefully...
well, you can unite.
We can unite. We can put people in the Senate.
Great.
There's a very strong candidate right now. His name is Walter... and
Walter...
Well, that's close enough. That's another problem. People have got to start learning to pronounce our names correctly. I can give you some pointers on that after.
Okay.
But he is he's a Republican. He's a strong contender, and I think by the year, 1992, he will be a strong candidate, and by that time, certainly people will have heard of us.
Great. Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr.
Thank you, Mike. And
and if anyone in our listening audience has any questions, please feel free to write to Roger, care of Radio Free Weekend, WUSB, State University of New York at Stony Brook, New York, 11794.
It's kind of a long address, isn't it?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Sure does.
Welcome to Radio Free Long Island. And,
the show that asks the question...
Why not?
Sure. Let's turn this thing off. Oh, wrong button.
Wrong button. Okay.
Close enough, it worked.
Great. We didn't lose too much tape. Well, welcome aboard, and I hope that this will prove to be as much of an adventure as I anticipate it to be. It's... certainly seems
that
way.
Why don't we introduce ourselves?
Oh, that would be a good idea.
I'm Eric Corley.
And I'm Mike Uhas.
Or
no,
it's the other way around, isn't it?
Something like that. I'm Mike Eric. No, Eric.
I'm Corley Uhas, and you're Eric Mike, right?
Something like that, but it doesn't really matter. We're two individuals in a world of strangers, and the purpose of this program is to try to bring some of those strangers together, and whether they want to or not. And we're certainly going to do that. We have a lot of interesting things planned for you tonight, and planned for us, of course, too.
Oh, I hope you're listening in stereo.
I hope so, too.
Because if you're on a fringe area, it really would behoove you to switch your stereo over into stereo if you could at all, because we are
in stereo.
Binaural? What's the difference between binaural and stereo? Quickly! Huh?
You know, I had a question like that in a class the other day. I didn't know what that answer
was. Was that your poli-sci class?
My poli-sci class, exactly.
Son of a gun.
They always ask me about stereos. I can't understand it.
Stereos and binaurals.
Well, in case any of you are wondering what has happened to the program that usually appears at this time...
Planet 3.
Planet 3 was on for... let me just sort of wrap up the history of this time slot. It's been a very unusual one. I believe it was last year at this time that a program called the Better Than Dead Air show went on the air, and that was a lot of fun. We did all sorts of crazy things. And then that gave way to another program that was just plain strange. It was called Planet 3. Nobody ever talked on the program. It was just...
Sure they did.
Well, people
none of us.
Talked backwards. They talked all sorts of weird things. But nobody from the station really said anything. We just sort of put it together. And it was a very interesting program.
It sure was. It put me to sleep many times, on many occasions.
We had a very positive response to it from babysitters and all sorts of people around the world. And maybe it will return someday in another form. But for right now, Planet 3 is on hold or put to rest somewhere. And this is Radio Free Long Island. And this being our debut program, we...
Why don't we tell the
folks...
had
quite a bit of notoriety all over the place. I believe it was Newsday, wasn't it?
We were in Newsday, and you have it right in front of you.
They found out about it somehow, and they said, Radio Free Long Island, Midnight WUSB, a different kind of program with hosts Mike Uhas and Eric Corley.
Different kind of hosts.
Whoever they are, I don't know. We got a couple of mailgrams. I haven't shown you these. I wanted to sort of surprise you on the air. We received them this morning, and apparently word's gotten a lot farther than we thought it had. Because we got a telegram, well, mailgram, actually, from Albany today.
Oh, they can't afford a telegram, can they?
No. Well, mailgrams are, they carry the impact. Well, anyway, okay.
Yeah, we all know the ads. We've seen them on the trains. Right. Ignore this. Ignore this
so
if you can.
We actually got something from Governor Hugh Carey. Can you believe that?
Son of a gun. What did he say?
He says, at last is a program that isn't afraid to speak its mind and show things as they are.
That's for sure.
And he says, I wish you boys luck. Lovingly, Hugh Carey. And I think it's very nice to sort of get off on the right foot with these people.
I just want to step out and verify that for him. I'm going to call the governor at his shelter.
Well,
residence.
I wouldn't recommend it now, Friday night and all.
That's true. He may be listening to us. Maybe he'll call.
That really didn't surprise me too much, because we have gotten telegrams and cables and all sorts of things from the governor before, wanting us to play certain songs and certain programs and that type of thing. He was a fan of Planet 3, I believe. Then we got one today from someone who was fairly new in the government scene, and someone who was elected last year and who just was inaugurated recently. A man in Washington, D.C. named Ronald Reagan. And
what did he say?
He said, it's kind of eloquently phrased like he usually does.
Mm-hmm.
But very simple, you know, to the point. It's the dawning of a new era, and Radio Free Long Island is going to be a major part of it.
Son of a gun.
And I have to admit, I agree with the man there. I totally agree with him. Radio Free Long Island is going to be a major part of the 80s. People are going to grow up with Radio Free Long Island. It's going to do things for them. They're going to look back in their old age.
Yes, it's
going to
do things for them.
Radio Free Long Island taught me this, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Radio Free Long Island. And thank God for it. I haven't finished the cable
by
yet.
By all means.
Radio Free Long Island is going to be a major part of it, and I look forward to working with you in the future. Sincerely, Ronald Reagan. And not many people put sincerely on a mailgram, let me tell you.
That's for sure. That's an extra 20 cents.
I was very surprised to hear from him. I'm glad we're reaching out and people are finding out about Radio Free Long Island. It's going to be a turning point, I think, for this country, for this world, in fact, and maybe other worlds.
Absolutely. Positively.
Inconsequentially. So, we have gotten out. We're here. Radio Free Long Island is... now, a thing of the present.
A thing of the present.
What did you want to read?
Well, talking about Governor, I mean,
President Reagan. I'm going to have to adjust myself to calling him President.
Yes. It is kind of hard for a lot of people.
His eloquent phraseology of sorts. I have in front of me a story which appeared in Long Island Newsday about a week ago. Friday, January 30th, I believe. Uh-huh. A proposal for a new English economy.
That's not for New England, or it's...
No.
It's for England.
A new,
oh, I see. Okay.
A new English economy. We'll get to it later, though. We'll get to it later.
Okay, that's one of the things coming your way.
We're going to have news reports, some special late bulletins, as reported to us from NL News Service.
NL News Service, whatever could that be? We also have something...
It just came today. I just got it today, so we're going to have to...
Excellent. We have a surprise for you. Now that
is it a surprise for me too? More than likely.
It's not a surprise for us because we've been working on it for the last couple of days, but it certainly will be a surprise for most people. During the Iran crisis that was a part of our lives for the last year or so, WUSB was doing some, say, extracurricular work on that, and now it can be revealed since the hostages are free. We made contact with the United States Embassy at one point, and also with the Foreign Ministry. We didn't talk to any of the hostages, but we did talk to some very
interesting characters.
Interesting characters in Iran, telephone operators, and just people who seem to like to answer the phone over there. And we have a tape of...
Where is it? It's in the other room.
It's in the other room, but we'll play it a little bit later. It's very interesting, very funny, too, just some of the things that happen over there. So we'll be getting to that. We'll also have some surprise interviews with interesting people. We were going to, and this is a fact, all kidding aside, we were going to interview Ambassador Robert White from El Salvador.
Bob White?
Bob White.
That is his true name.
It is.
He's no longer ambassador.
Something happened this week. He got fired. Now everybody wants to talk to him, and we, of course, we can't get to him. But
we wanted to talk to him beforehand, but
we wanted to talk to
just
him.
Just never got around to it.
We were going to. In fact, I was all set to place the call when I received word that he had been relieved of his position.
Nixed,
right. So much for that. We'll try to find more interesting people. If you have any suggestions as to who you'd like us to talk to, we can do it. Part of my philosophy, and I think part of Mike's philosophy, is that the human mind can do anything. And we'll certainly prove that here.
Bravo.
Well said, huh?
Mm.
I must say so myself. So.
Well, let me just read one of these stories from the NetCamp News.
Okay with me.
This is, Thank you. That's my little introductory bit there.
Mike's introduction. Go ahead.
What was that? Was that a car crash or what?
It's
interesting because I was driving down the road the other day, and I thought this was very interesting. Tooting along.
Driving down the road can be very interesting.
It can be, especially at this point.
Especially if you're driving on the left side of the road.
Well, we're going to read that little story about England in a few moments. What are you doing? You're trying to strangle me with my cord here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. Now, I was driving down the road the other day. I was just tooting along in my automobile. And it was about dusk. So everybody's taillights showed up perfectly in the dark. We're tooting along, all by myself, I guess, and coming up to a traffic light, or a stoplight, or whatever you'd like to call it. And because it's open to debate what people call those things with the three lights on it. What is it, red on top, right, yellow in the middle, and green on bottom?
They're decorations of a sort. They do flash in unison. I mean, they go from one light to another.
There is some kind of sequence there.
It's green on the bottom.
Yeah. I think if...
Orange or yellow or something.
Amber. Amber, yes. Because
right.
My name's not Bamber.
And red on the top.
Traffic lights.
Red on the top. And they're never all on at the same time, are they?
Well... I've seen him on... Well, anyhow, that's not the gist of the story.
You've seen a lot of things, Mike.
Yes, I've been around. That's not the gist of my story, though. The whole crux of the matter is we're tooting along and come up to one of these things that does these things, and it turns yellow, and everybody slams on their brakes at the same time, and all these, like, six cars in front of me, all put on their brakes at the exact same millisecond.
It must have made a...
it made a dent in my mind.
Beautiful symmetry of lights, suddenly... Like lighting a huge Christmas tree in
exactly
in Rockefeller Center.
Well, no, not exactly.
Except all red.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something in Red Square, but just this simultaneous.
It was. It was very interesting because all these people's lights came on all at the same time, and it was really kind of neat. And on the way home from an automobile trip to Florence, Italy, with her daughter and son-in-law, a Hungarian woman died suddenly. The couple placed her body in the back seat of the car and continued toward home. Still in Italy, they stopped briefly at a restaurant for coffee, and while they were inside, someone stole the woman's body from the car. Despite pleas in a number of local Italian newspapers, the body was not recovered. And that is from UPI, of course. Of course.
That's interesting, but what in the world does that have to do with all the cars slamming on their brakes?
Well, it was just a neat kind of thing. It probably has absolutely no interest to anyone listening. But this story I just read you reminds me an awful lot. When I was in grammar school, I had an acquaintance who had an acquaintance who was a New York City police officer, and... his mother-in-law had been ill, and she was recovering from some illness or something. This is true, too. And don't give me that skeptical look.
That's not my skeptical look.
What is it?
That's my just plain unbelieving look.
But this is true. Skeptical and unbelieving, aren't they about the same?
Not really. Skeptical's a little bit less.
Okay.
Unbelieving is totally gone.
So anyway, this woman was recovering, and everybody thought she was well on the way to recovery. And they're tooting along. They decide they're going to go for a little camping trip upstate. So they pick up the kid at school and that kind of thing. And so all four of them go up to upstate, some lake or someplace, I don't know. And they tucked everybody in bed, and the husband and wife just sat out by the campfire for a little while. Mm-hmm. And they... well, before they settled in bed, they wanted to check on the kid and mother. So they checked on the kid. He was okay, but the mother had died. And this is true. So they decided, well, they have to pack it up and pack everything.
Excuse me, is this the morbid hour or something?
Sure.
Are we
but this
about
is
dead people?
This is very interesting.
It is? Okay, I hope so.
Yes. So this fellow who was telling me this story, in fact, he was at one point an assistant to a mortician.
Right.
More stories from that later. But anyway,
I'm sure.
They decided, well, gosh, you know, it would cost so much money to have this corpse shipped down. Why not transport it ourselves? And say she died at home. We woke her up. We woke up the next morning and looked in her bed, and she was passed on.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided, they rolled her up in a tent, and they put her up on the roof of the car. They really did. So they're driving along.
I'm not even going to say anything. Just keep going.
They're driving along. Then why did you just say that then? They're driving along, and they get tired. And, of course, they did the exact same thing that these people did. And this is true. They stopped off for coffee because they had been on the road since earlier that morning. And, well, they said, well, let's stop for coffee. So they stopped. And while they were in the diner, someone stole their car.
Oh, boy.
Because they must have figured, wow, I wonder what's that inside the tent. Let's take the car, and it's probably worth a lot of money. So they,
you know, this sounds like the basis for a very good script of something like Green Acres or one of those great TV comedy series where, you know, this chaos reigns for a day and everybody
sounds
sort of,
kind of sick.
Everybody goes crazy running around town looking for the car and something.
Well, they finally
maybe
found
the
car.
90s or
they found the car, and
they
it was
found the car.
It was abandoned a short distance away, and no suspects were ever apprehended in the theft of the car because apparently they had unraveled the tent and found this woman's body and were terrified beyond all recognition. And they just took off, and apparently the guy might have lost his job or was severely punished for trying this act of bringing his mother-in-law home. It's all interesting. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure everybody out there is
touched, deeply touched.
Touched in various ways that maybe they wouldn't have liked to have been touched in the moment, but they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Well, you're welcome.
I came from the NL News Service.
No, that was the real, true story that happened.
Was it?
To an acquaintance of an acquaintance.
Oh, you mean this is somebody you
that
know?
Was true. That was absolutely true.
I'm sorry, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, well, the thing...
That puts the horse of a different color in the light.
The thing from here actually did happen. In Italy as well.
Well, and, yeah, you told us all about that.
But it really kind of reminded me of the same thing. So what should we do now?
Well, there's all sorts of options open to us. We can... see, the phones are ringing. Well, we won't be taking phone calls at the moment, but we can always do that. We can take phone calls. We can make phone calls. We can...
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
We were going to call somebody up in the...
Well, I'd rather not say. We'll do it.
Let's just do it by surprising the person, surprising ourselves.
Right. I doubt very much the person we're going to call is listening.
I don't think so. In fact... I can say definitely the person is not listening. And
not listening
you'll see
at all.
Why that person would not listen to this program.
Or this station at this time.
It. Right.
We'll tell you later. But, well, how about if we just bring up the music in the background and we'll set you up with the Iranian tapes? We have
all sorts of things planned for you.
Yes, we have Frank Sinatra in the shower.
You know, that's interesting. I don't know how in the world you managed to get a tape of Frank Sinatra.
Well, how about if we cue... You want to cue that up now?
We can do that, sure.
Okay.
Mike went to a lot of trouble doing this, and I know because he came back today all...
I had a big smile on his face.
Yeah, he had a big smile because he triumphed in the end, but obviously he went through quite a bit to get this done. Somehow, where does Frank Sinatra live in the first place? He must have traveled quite a
bit. Well, I'm not allowed to tell you.
All right, well...
Not only Frank Sinatra, but I did have the good fortune of meeting his band.
His band was
his entire complement was taking a shower with him.
That's amazing. Well, I have to hand it to you there. You certainly proved the USB spirit by... Okay, do you have it all?
Well, do you want to cue it up and...
Well, why don't we just...
Okay, well, just come it up under us.
Okay, fine.
This will be Frank Sinatra singing in the shower.
Well, when Frank Sinatra gets into the shower, he's probably on his way there now.
Yeah.
Here he comes now. He just opened the door and he stepped in. Ah, there he is.
Okay.
The final girl.
In case you're tuning in right now, what we're doing is the best of the voice of Walt Howard. I'm Mike Uhas. Eric Corley is out to this evening, being Christmas and all, you know. He'll be back again next week doing the same thing that I'm doing here, running the old tapes, and I'll be out partying for a change on a Friday night. We have been hearing some things there. We heard Frank Sinatra in the shower. Just before that, we heard the first rap we had ever done, and a couple of other things before that.
and bogus news. During, I guess it was sometime in March, or maybe April. I don't exactly remember when. There were some explosions in Louisville, Kentucky. And in our manner, we called up some people in Louisville, Kentucky, to see what they had to say about them. And this is for real, right here on USB.
There is a series of explosions in about a 15-block area of Louisville, which is near downtown Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Early this morning, the series of explosions came shortly after 5 o'clock this morning in the sewer system. It put holes, crater-like holes, some as deep as 25 feet and at least one or two as long as about 200 yards. The streets are caved in those areas, blew chunks of the pavement into houses and storefronts and caused a lot of damage, went through people's roofs and knocked holes in the side of the buildings. A lot of people are being evacuated from that area tonight, mainly because their sewer system could back up. There's no further danger of any explosions. The Metropolitan Sewer District here in Louisville has pretty much determined that the explosions were caused by a volatile substance in the sewer system. That substance is a chemical called hexane. Hexane was is used to extract certain things from certain products. They think that it may have come from a Ralston Purina plant here in Louisville. Last night the Metropolitan Sewer District was called to that Ralston Purina plant at about 2 o'clock in the morning to check out a problem there where an overflow tank containing hexane did overflow and some of it did dump into the sewer system. And so they think that may be the problem. They haven't definitely pinpointed it yet, and they're not pointing the finger at Ralston Purina, definitely yet. But the Metropolitan Sewer District here has gone to the circuit court here and received an injunction against Ralston Purina, which prevents them from dumping any other type of waste at all into the sewer system. That injunction also gives them, or it prevents Ralston Purina from doing anything to the records from last night that they were keeping. And it also gives the Metropolitan Sewer District the authority to conduct a full-scale investigation. That's pretty much the situation right now. There were just a few injuries. Luckily, it happened at a time of day when there weren't very many people on the streets. And that's just a very lucky thing. If it would have happened maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours later when people were beginning to go to work and rush hour traffic was just getting started, then it could have been a catastrophe. But luckily, it happened early enough that that didn't cause that much of a problem.
Oh, I see. And you say you've had manhole covers flying like Frisbees.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way some people describe it. Felt a big rumble and saw fire, like, shooting through his windows. And something threw him up against the wall, and he hit the floor. And the next thing you knew, he had a huge hole in his ceiling and a huge hole in his wall. It came from a pavement being blown up off the street and through his ceiling and through his wall. At least one case, a manhole flew through a lady's roof and caused a lot of damage to the home there. So it's pretty extensive.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's going to look like an earthquake is the general consensus of most people. The damage, an earthquake, or it looks like somebody flew over here with some bombs and plastered the place.
Wow. Phew.
It's basically about a 15-block area of Louisville, near downtown Louisville, but not right in the downtown area. But it is a neighborhood that is near the downtown Louisville area.
Right. Okay, and your name is?
My name is Rick Redmond.
thanks for calling, then.
Did we call you?
No, not really.
Okay. Somebody, I was just passing through, and somebody said somebody wanted to talk to someone here. So, all right, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
My name is Mike Uhas from radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, New York. We hear you folks had some explosions down there this morning, and various reports are attributing it to Ralston Purina. Is there any way that you can comment on this?
No, sir, I really can't, Mike. The folks that could do that are not here.
I kind of figured as much. It is kind of late.
It's almost midnight here.
Yeah, it's almost midnight here, too.
Midnight everywhere as far as the two of us are concerned.
Yeah, I guess so.
They've retired for the day.
For the day. Okay, and, well, what's your name, then?
I'm just an employee here.
Special cooperation with the Three Village Tobacco Farms has been proud to present the Tripod family throughout 1981. And tonight, as a special public service for our listeners, we're going to update the story of the Tripod family. The Tripods moved from Big Bear City to Long Island to find happiness, peace, and security. The Tripod family consists of Howard Tripod.
So what do we have for breakfast this morning? I'm starved.
And his wife, Kathy.
I guess that wasn't the South African flu I had last night, but just a slight head cold.
Also living with the Tripods in their new Long Island home is Howard's father, Pop.
Do you mean to tell me that each and every single bleeding one of those oranges we buy comes from clear across the country?
After living on Long Island for a short while, the Tripods make quick friends with their next-door neighbor, Charlie.
Long Island can be a fun place to live, if you give it a chance.
But it becomes clear after the first couple of episodes that there is a dark secret lurking in the Tripod past. And it involves a certain Uncle Jonathan.
Do you folks mean to tell me that you had a rich uncle out in California and he wouldn't help you save your house in Big Bear City?
Coincidentally, Uncle Jonathan announces in a letter his plan to visit the Tripods in their new Long Island home. And when he gets there, he makes a special offer to Howard.
Well, here's somebody who's had some sort of experience to star in a major motion picture I'm producing. I think you have all the qualifications, Howard.
Howard is at first reluctant to go down to Whitney Island to film this motion picture, but he changes his mind when he finds out the name of a famous French actress who is also starring in the film.
I keep forgetting her name.
Oh,
it's
a French...
A French name. French actress.
She was in Playboy magazine.
I work with her all the time. I should remember the name. I don't know why I can't do that. I heard it just yesterday. I keep forgetting.
About a tunnel or a...
Brigitte, that's it. Brigitte LaRue.
But Howard does not even have a chance to meet Brigitte LaRue, because as soon as he gets down to Whitney Island, a terrible thing happens. He goes out on a canoe and somehow can't get back to the island.
I can't move. I'm moving in the other direction. I don't want to move in the other direction. Hello? You guys on the shore, can you hear me? Hello, I'm moving the other way. I don't want to do that. I want to go back to the island. Hello?
They can't hear me. Oh, my goodness. What am I going to do? And so Howard drifts out to sea and soon finds himself on a strange island with some interesting people.
What do you do here?
Meanwhile, back home on Long Island, Uncle Jonathan is trying to make the other family members believe that Howard has actually run off with the famous French actress.
Well, she never did show up for a part that day, and I can't seem to get a hold of her.
Oh, you mean Howard's a two-timer?
Oh, my gosh. I never figured Howard to be that kind of a person.
Yes, I must admit it. I didn't think he had that much in him.
Well, if this is true, what are you folks going to do? Call off the search or just wait and see?
So that's what 7 years of marriage leads to. I should have known better. That slimy two-timer.
Well, wait a minute, Kathy. This hasn't been proven yet.
It's only Uncle Jonathan's conjunction.
Right, and besides... conjecture, you mean. Besides all that, we have Howard's character to look at. Now, you folks have known Howard a lot longer than I have, and he wouldn't just up and take off with some cheap French actress, now would he? Well, would he?
Howard eventually finds his way out of the island and comes back home, only to find...
Kathy! Kathy, I'm back. Oh, open the door. I wasn't lost at sea after all. I was in Cape May, New Jersey, but I didn't know it. Kathy! Pop? Why don't you open the door? It's me, Howard.
What the hell's going on here? You know what time it is?
Who are you? What are you doing in my house?
Your house? I got news for you, mister. This is my house. That's my porch you're standing on. You've got your hand on my front door. And in a moment, I'm going to show you my hunting rifle if you don't clear out of here.
Is that you, Howard?
Oh, no. Now the whole neighborhood's turning out at my doorstep.
Charlie, I can't tell you how good it is to see you again. But where is everybody? What happened to Kathy and Pop? And who's this guy? And what's he doing in my house?
Look, it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, Howard, it's kind of a long story, you see.
Could you possibly tell this here story of yours somewhere else? All right, another time. My wife and I have to get some sleep, don't you know?
You just hold on there. No one's going anyplace till I find out what's going on here. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you're in my house, mister, and I don't even know what your name is.
Oh, it's Stanley. Hubert Stanley.
Oh, I'm Howard Tripod.
Oh.
Good to meet you.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Mr. Tripod.
This is my next-door neighbor, Charlie.
Oh, yes, we already met. And he's my next-door neighbor, not yours, wise guy.
Well, why don't you just ask him?
Hey, your name sounds familiar, you know? Hang on. Hey, Julie! Julie, didn't the lady who rented us this house have a real crazy-sounding last name? Like Tripod or something?
Is he talking about Kathy?
Yeah. Yeah, my wife says yes. Someone named Kathy Tripod rented this house to us.
What is he talking about, Charlie? Kathy would never do anything crazy like that.
Oh, you want to bet? You want to see the lease, pal?
Howard, let me try to explain this to you. Now, we got word from Whitney Island that you disappeared shortly after arriving there for the film.
You were going to be in a film?
Well, I was before I got lost in a canoe.
Hey, Julie, this guy's a movie star.
Anyway, Howard, we believe that you were really lost in the Atlantic Ocean. That is, until your Uncle Jonathan came over and told us what he thought really happened.
Hey, this is sounding more and more like a soap opera.
He said he didn't believe that you were really lost, and that you actually planned a secret rendezvous with that French actress.
And as you can see, at this point, the tripods are all messed up. You want to tune in next week when we'll bring you up to the present in this special Tripod Catch-Up series. Until then, this is Don Topeka for Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms, wishing you a happy holiday.
This is J.C. Lodge, and whenever I'm in Long Island, I listen to WUSB Stony Brook. I'm going to go to the next one.
From his busy day to tell you about the dangers of blasting caps. Say hello, Claus.
Hello, Fireman Jim. Plastic wrap ain't dangerous. Pipe down, Chunky. Not a plastic wrap. Blasting caps.
Hello there, youngsters. Now, see this little innocent-looking thing I've got in my hand? Well, there's death and destruction written all over it. It's a blasting cap. And if you mess with these, know what can happen?
What, Fireman Jim?
It can blow your hand off, like this. Or your foot, like this. Or your head, or leg.
How about your ear? So what?
So take it from me, kids. Don't you go off to vacant lots or construction sites, search the ground until you see something that looks like a blasting cap, and start fooling around with it. That's a no-no, and don't put them in your mouth either. So long, kids.
Goodbye, Fireman Jim! Gosh, that sure was some lecture from Fireman Jim this morning, wasn't it?
Yes, sirree. Say, there's Bobby and Tommy and Susie and a bunch of other kids. Let's join them!
Hi, fellas! What's up?
Oh, we're just messing around, talking about math homework and pushing rocks and baseball.
You know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going down to the old abandoned construction site to play with some plastic caps.
Oh, no, you're getting in trouble. Don't do it.
Who's coming with me? Bucky and Spooky?
Save the taffy for the suckers. I'm no chump.
Tommy? Tommy?
Tommy?
What's the matter, you guys? Get there or something.
Brady caps? Cry babies?
Who's Brady?
Brady?
Let's go.
But we better get a responsible adult. It's too dangerous for just us kids. Mr. Grocer Man, help! Chunky and Tommy and Bobby have gone to play with blasting caps.
You kids get out of here. Scram!
You think this is a blasting cap?
Nah,
that's just an old penny wrapper.
Gosh, Mr. Grocer Man kicked us out, Mr. Baker Man kicked us out, and Mr. Ice Cream Vendor threw a bucket of water on us. What'll we do?
I know. Let's get Fireman Jim.
Yeah.
Hey, fellas, look in here.
Is it?
Yep, a genuine blasting cap.
Gosh, gee.
Let me see if we can find
construction site?
That's right, Fireman Jim!
We can only hope to reach them in time to prevent the tragedy.
Look! There they are!
No, kids, stop! Don't touch those! Kids got off lucky. By now you might have been crossing the River Styx or shuffling off the mortal coil or buying the farm or getting a one-way ticket to the pearly gates or paying nature's debt or going to the happy hunting grounds or giving up the ghost or going west or pushing up the daisies or kicking the bucket.
Today's presentation of Bunky and Spunky was written by Keel Stewart and was produced and directed by Mike Juhas, Howie Austerlitz, and Keel Stewart. Our actors were Howard Austerlitz, Frank Burgert, Eric Corley, Joanne Summer, Keel Stewart, Jim Wiener, and Mike Juhas. Thank you, and good night.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We've taken the liberty of calling up a fellow who's near and dear to any of us sports fans. This is just another in a long line of Radio Free Weekend interviews. We called up Marvin Miller. Now, if you're not familiar, he's the head of the negotiating team for the baseball players. And we got him on the line. He's on hold to his home in California right now. Hello, are you there? Hello?
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 Hello? Who's this?
This is Radio Free Weekend calling from Long Island.
Well, what do you want with me?
Well, we'd like to know your opinion on your negotiations. How are they going?
Negotiations?
Yes, the negotiations. How are they going?
Which negotiations are you talking about, fella?
Well, I'm talking about the baseball player negotiations.
Oh, good. I don't care about the baseball stuff. I've got more important things in my mind than baseball, you know that?
I beg your pardon. Well, you are deeply involved with this, aren't you?
Why should I be deeply involved with this? It doesn't concern me at all. I don't care about people hitting balls with sticks and running around in circles. What should that have to do with me?
It doesn't concern you in the least?
Of course not. Well, does it concern... I mean, look, Bobby, do you really care about, baseball? It's a game. Come on.
What?
So they have a little fight and they go running home. Okay. It's not going to bother me. Why should I be concerned about it?
Well, I realize it's a game, but you are, in fact, the chief negotiator for the baseball players, aren't you?
Says who?
Says all the news.
This guy said I was involved in the baseball strike. Boy, are you crazy or something?
Says who? Says all the major news services. Marvin Miller, right?
No. Pal, look, I told you before, if you'd listen to me and just shut up your big mouth for 1 second, you might understand something. My name is Marvin Muller, not Marvin Miller. Marvin Muller. I have nothing to do with this baseball strike. You understand that?
You're Marvin...
You're not the first person to do this to me. I'm really getting sick of it, all right?
You're Marvin Muller?
I'm Marvin Muller.
Not Marvin Miller.
No, I have nothing to do with this. I don't care about it. Do you understand that?
I think I do, but... Well, wait a minute. Well, we better get on the news service. They sent us your phone number then.
They're sending my phone number out. about now.
Yeah, so you're probably bound to get a lot of more...
I'm going to have to get the phone number changed now, you understand?
Yeah, you're bound to get a lot more phone calls before too long.
Well, I'm just going to leave the phone off the hook, huh? Like that.
Oh, okay, well, since we did make this long-distance phone call, you already told us that you really don't care about the baseball strike.
I don't care about the baseball strike. As far as I'm concerned, it can go on forever.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you do?
You really want to know what I do?
Well, yeah, since it would be of interest to our listeners.
Yeah, you're really desperate, I guess. If you must know, I make paper clips.
Paper clips?
I work in a paper clip factory. Yes, I'm in charge of the process where they're curled.
Right there in Los Angeles?
Yes. And I have nothing to do with baseball, nothing to do with the baseball strikes. We go through entire working days, entire working weeks, without ever once saying the word baseball.
Oh, really? Well, don't you sell paper clips to the baseball teams?
No, we don't sell paper clips. That's maybe another company located in Paducah, Kentucky.
Oh, I see. But you only curl them.
I'm in charge of the curling. We make the entire thing. We make the whole paper clip at our factory. It comes to our factory, just one long metal bar. Not really a bar, but a very small piece of metal. And what we do is we curl it, we have somebody else twist it around in a certain way, and then one final person checks it on a piece of paper to make sure it works.
Oh, I see.
And I've been doing it for about 12, 15 years. It's quite interesting. You don't really care about this. Why in the world are you asking me about paper clips?
Well, because we have you on...
Look, I've got more important things to the Bernie Miller's on right now. I really would appreciate it if you go back to whatever you're doing, leave me alone, and just goodbye.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Another one in a continuing series of Radio Free Weekend interviews. Stay tuned.
You can just sit down over here.
Oh, thank you.
Well, folks, we have another guest with us right now. His name is Orville Nine, and I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, where did you get that name?
You know, a lot of people ask me that because they think my name's written like a number, mm-hmm. but it's not. It's spelled N-Y-N-E, actually.
Oh, I see.
It's an old Norwegian name.
Oh, how about that? Well, Mr. Nine, by the way, was born and raised in Binsburg, Idaho, and that's where you live today, too, isn't that right?
Yep.
Well, what brings you out to Stony Brook?
Oh, I don't know. Things just get kind of dull sometimes over in Binsburg. So one day I just threw a dart at a map and it landed at Stony Brook. Here I am.
So you are. You know, the reason I asked you up to the studios is because you look so unusual and different walking around in the lobby downstairs with all that lumberjack equipment. You wouldn't happen to be a lumberjack by any chance.
Well, yeah, actually I am. I've been a lumberjack for about 35 years, in fact.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I guess since I've been a lumberjack for so long, I kind of forgot to take all the stuff off when I got on an aeroplane.
That must have caused quite a commotion.
Yeah, I was wondering why no one would sit next to me.
As a lumberjack in Idaho, you must have seen a heck of a lot of wildlife. Did you ever get approached by a grizzly bear or a mountain lion?
Well, no, I can't say I did.
How about a whooping crane or a rattlesnake?
No, I don't see any of these. Never seen any of them. Hmm. I saw a dog once. I think it was a Great Dane or something.
But wait a minute. These are the forests of Idaho we're talking about now. Surely you must see some forms of wildlife.
Well, this was a really big dog. Well, I've never seen anything like him before in my life.
Okay. It's clear that the Idaho you've been wandering around in all your life is sort of uncharted territory, let's say. I'm going to have you personally escorted back downstairs so you can keep on walking in circles in your lumberjack attire and do whatever else comes to mind.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Talk to you next time.
Radio Free Long Island would like to direct your attention to a very serious problem facing each and every one of us. That is, of course, the international key shortage, which we are suddenly faced with. Now, a few years ago, we would go about getting keys made for everything and anything, and then we would go around and get copies made, too. Well, these are the 1980s, and things have changed. Americans, as well as Italians, Romanians, Mongolians, and people who live in Sri Lanka, must learn to conserve their keys. After all, the supply is not indefinite. If we continue to produce keys at the present rate, we will surely run out by the year 1997. And then what will life be like? We won't be able to lock our doors at night or even start our cars in the morning. If any new prisons are built, the inmates will have to be trusted to remain in their cells. Think about it. Life as we know it would become a true nightmare. We need keys to survive. That's why we're asking you to help out wherever you can. If you know of somebody who's using too many keys, report him to your local key conservation office. If your house burns to the ground or if your apartment building is torn down, turn in your keys. You don't need them anymore. If your car is stolen or demolished in an accident, or even if it dies after 2.5 years of faithful service, turn in your car keys. You won't be needing them. If we can all think in a key-efficient manner, we will be able to survive this crisis, but only if we begin now. Remember, an America with keys is an America with pride. Thank you.
Well, with us in our studios tonight is Professor Darryl Jones from the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana, where he has been... Mr. Jones? What happened to him?
I'm right over here, Mike. I'm right over here. I'm sorry. I was just getting some of your marvelous Long Island water. You know, the water in Illinois is always so so warm, and sometimes it's brown.
Oh, is that a fact? Well...
this is good stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll have to send out a Radio Free Weekend investigation teams into that one.
Yeah, you should do that.
Yeah, but right now we're talking about this idea you've come up with in your laboratory out there.
Yes. Well, before you go any further, I wanted to make one small correction. You said my last name was Jones. It's actually Joan without the S.
Oh, I see. J-O-A-N?
No, it's J-O-N-E. We dropped the S in 1952 so that we would be ahead of all the other Joneses in the phone book.
Oh. Well, all right. Anyhow, Professor Darryl Joan of the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana has been doing some research over there, and he's come up with this this idea, a marvelous invention that's going to make everybody's life just a little bit easier. And, well, why don't you just tell us all about it?
That'd be nice, Mike. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, not only will this new invention simplify life for everybody, but it'll also eliminate some unnecessary jobs, sort of like what President Reagan's trying to do.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. That's commendable. I bet the current administration would be very interested in what you're doing.
Oh, they are. I've already contacted them.
They're tickle pink?
Yeah, we're going to be working together on this project.
Oh, well, what wasteful position are you going to cut out? Some corporate executive, vice presidential, custodian assistant, or something?
No, not quite, Mike. The position is one which every one of us sees in action every day.
Well, we're all waiting. What is it?
Oh, it's grocery cart collectors.
Grocery cart collectors?
That's right. Now, every shopping center in America employs them to simply go out into the parking lot and bring back the grocery carts that the customers leave out there. Now, I estimate that the total cost to keep this process going exceeds $47 billion annually.
Sounds like a big waste.
Yeah, and I think that money would do better in our defense budget.
Really? Well, what's your alternative? I mean, if we didn't have these people, we'd really be stuck. Americans are basically lazy. They don't want to take their carts back themselves. We probably wouldn't be able to move our cars to the parking lot because all these grocery carts would be just like flooding the parking lot.
It is a major problem. Everybody's aware of that. But I can assure you, my invention will put an end to it.
And that is?
That is to magnetize supermarkets.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, could you go into that a little bit more?
Certainly, Mike. Now, my invention utilizes an alternative method of getting grocery carts back to the supermarket, namely the pull of magnetic power. Now, as I already mentioned, the supermarket or department store or whatever would be magnetized by simply attaching a large magnetic plate to the front of the store.
I see, where the shopping carts are usually left.
Precisely. Now, each individual grocery cart would then have a little switch on it, which would either be on or off. Now, when the shopper brings his groceries out to the car and finishes loading them, he would flip the switch into the on position, activating the magnet on the front of the grocery cart. The cart would then go hurtling across the parking lot and come to rest on the magnetic plate in front of the store.
Wow.
And when a shopper wants to reuse the grocery cart, the first thing he would do is turn the switch to off. This deactivates the magnet, and the shopper would then be able to gain control of the shopping cart and bring it into the store and purchase whatever he wanted, and probably at a reduced rate because the store would no longer have to pay the person who finds all the shopping carts.
That is something you've got there, Professor Joan. I can almost picture it now, but what about all the cars in the parking lot? I mean, it's hard enough avoiding people and little children and other cars and those little cute little trees that they put up in the little islands there.
Yeah.
But what's a motorist expected? How is he going to dodge all these unmanned grocery carts?
Well, they'll have to keep their eyes open. That's all there is to it, Mike. You could consider it a sort of alertness test.
And how fast do the carts go?
Well, I would say they could probably get up to a good 60 or 70 miles per hour, depending on distance.
So if a motorist or even a pedestrian isn't really paying attention, they'd be in for quite a surprise.
Oh, you live and learn, Mike. That's what it's all about.
Huh. Something I just thought of might be a bit of a problem.
Oh?
Yeah. Now, supposing there was another supermarket or a department store in the same shopping center.
Uh-huh.
Now, if one magnet was stronger than the other one and or somehow it accidentally got disconnected, what would happen? What would stop one store from gaining all the shopping carts from the other? I can just see a crowd of shopping carts, maybe 100 of them, going from one end of the supermarket, smashing into cars and people on the way to the other magnetic plate.
Yeah, well, we have thought of all that already, Mike, so you don't have to worry. Now, you know how a magnet can be both positive and negative?
Yeah.
Well, a solution to the point you brought up would be to have one store be positive and the other negative. Not only would the cart know which store to go to, but if a customer tried to bring one store's shopping cart to a different store, the positive forces would repel the negative and the cart would fly back into his face.
Well, that's simply amazing, Professor, and it takes care of something that I always was annoyed about. It's kind of being embarrassed when I push one supermarket's cart into another supermarket.
No, you're not the only one, Mike.
I'll bet.
And we're hoping to take this a few steps further and eventually have a different channel for each store. The range would then be virtually unlimited.
Oh, I see. So, like, each individual store in a shopping center could have their own code.
Precisely.
So you could take delis would have, and, like, little boutiques.
Supermarkets, Chinese restaurants,
and they'd have
drug
their own
stores.
Shopping carts.
Somebody could, under this system, take a shopping cart home, and it would even manage to find its way back to the store that it came from once the switch was put into the on position.
I see. It sounds like this could be the most important invention of the 1980s.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, tell me, have there been any problems with it? I mean, there must have been some.
Well, we have been using this on a trial basis in a few supermarkets in Champaign and Urbana. For the most part, though, it worked all right, but there were a few problems.
Oh?
Yeah, like the time a kid was sitting on the little seat, you know, in the grocery cart inside the store.
With his legs hanging out?
Yes, and he flicked the switch on and activated the magnet.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the cart took off in the frozen food section and went straight through the plate glass window. It came to rest just like it was supposed to against a magnet. But
it had to go through the window to do that.
Yes, it did. In that case, the magnet should not have been turned on, obviously. Luckily,
anybody hurt?
Luckily, nobody was hurt, but there were a couple of $100 worth of damage.
Oh, boy.
Which we had to pay for, too. But we are clearing the field of those little difficulties. We're thinking of installing a system where the switch could not be turned on from inside the store. It would sort of cancel itself out.
Oh, I see. So there would be all sorts of electromagnetic pulses inside the store.
Precisely. It could be quite a sophisticated system.
Oh. Well,
in the long run.
Well, I wish you the best of luck and success with your latest invention.
Why, thank you. And I hope we bring the system out to a shopping center near you so you can demonstrate it for yourself.
Okay. Well, when you do that, we'll have to have you up here again.
Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Do you mind if I take some of this water with me?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Well, don't spill it, though. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Goodbye.
Good evening. I've been asked by the folks at Radio Free Long Island to come down and speak to you tonight on proper radio procedure.
and how you should be absolutely calm and control and know exactly how to act while you're on the radio. Because there are many folks who desire a career in the broadcast industry. Now, well, good evening. My name's Bill Thompson, and I'm a consultant from Scarsdale. And actually, I haven't lived there all my life, but I do work from time to time. I do work for one of the nation's largest broadcast schools. And, well, there are many different ways you can become a radio announcer or television announcer or anything that we're going to talk about tonight. You can apply to any other thing like public speaking or that kind of thing. Now the important thing here is you got to maintain an even keel, and you got to know exactly you got to speak in calm and measured tones and that kind of thing. And now remember, relax. That's all you have to do. And don't eat while you're talking on the microphone. Now remember, you should also watch your step. And be very quiet. Be very quiet, and that you don't make any noises in the background while you're actually talking on the radio. Oh, I'm sorry. Now, one of the things we strive to teach you at our famous broadcasting school. is how exactly to introduce music. Now, if I can just find a record. Over here. Oh, get me the doctor or something. I don't know. I got a gargle or something. Excuse me. We gotta get a record here. We have to know how to put it on the turntable and start it rolling without the audience knowing what's going on in the radio station. Now, this is exactly what we do. See, now notice how that started exactly when I started to talk. Now you gotta keep talking until the vocal starts, or else the entire concept, the entire thing will be ruined. So just keep on talking until she starts singing. Oops. Well, we didn't need you anyway. Get me to the hospital. Goodbye. Thank you. Good night. How do you turn this microphone off?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Soundfront Stadium for tonight's game between the home team, the Beagles, and the visitors, the Dachshunds. Our lineups for tonight. For the Dachshunds, playing second base, Brian Hasbrook, number 63. Right field, Todd Hauslanger, number 98.5. Shortstop, Sue Pfeffer, number 56. Left field, Barry Reagan, number 1. Playing center field, Karen John, number 14. First base, Barbara Bloom, number 25. Third base, Jerry Zuckerman, number 47. Catcher, Barbara Gore Suter, number 32. And our pitcher for the Dachshunds tonight will be Lou Stevens, number 3. The Eagles manager, Bill Senakowicz, informs us that third base, Nancy Bellucci, number 66, will be first. Right fielder, Steve Blyberg, number 12, will be next. Shortstop, Mark Stern, number 19. Center fielder, Lister Hewen Lowe, number 444. First base, Bill McKenzie, number 27. Second base, Bob Duffy, number 96. Left fielder, Bill Lazaroff, number 103.9. Catcher, Gary Pecorino, number 37. And the pitcher for the Beagles will be Buddy Angelello, number 9. Once again, the manager for the visiting team, the Dachshunds, Erica Goldstein, and the Beagles, Bill Senakowicz. And, ladies and gentlemen, as an added treat tonight, the Star Spangled Banner will be performed by Jimi Hendrix.
Hey, that's right. Enroll at the Duluth School of Broadcasting and set yourself up for a career in the radio industry where you never know what's going to happen next. You too can be a real live DJ and you don't even have to speak English. Yes, become a radio announcer and join literally millions of Duluth grads placed in the highly unstable radio biz. Classes that start April 1st can get you on the air by June 1st and on the unemployment lines by July 1st. Act now. Get your application by calling 555-4216 and don't delay. Classes start April 1st, and that's no joke. Get off your duff and call Duluth at 555-4217.
Good evening, sports fans. I'm Les Huggins, along with Brian Flanagan, and what an evening of baseball we have ahead of us tonight.
We sure do, Les. And today's the opening game of the Stony Brook Dachshunds versus the Stony Brook Beagles at the Beagle Park.
The Campus Bus Series is what they call this one.
That's true. So the Dachshunds are up first.
Yes, and we will be getting underway any second. What a beautiful evening this is. You can see all the stars and all sorts of things. It's going to be a great game tonight.
The Beagles are all lined up on the field now. Buddy Angelello, the pitcher, throwing a few to Gary Pecorino.
The first batter will be Brian Hasbrook. He's for the Stony Brook Dachshunds. Brian batted 202 last season. Number 63, second baseman. And it looks like we're all set to get on the way here.
And he steps up to the plate.
And Buddy is looking straight ahead. Wind up. He does this very slowly the first time. He wants us to appreciate every movement. And here comes the pitch. And it's a strike. Brian just looked at that one go by. He couldn't believe how fast that was.
You couldn't ask for a better pitch.
It's amazing. Buddy winds up so slowly, but yet the ball moves incredibly fast.
That's true. Buddy sure does have an incredible amount of power behind him.
All right. The second pitch is almost on the way. The windup and the throw, and there it goes again, right by him. And
right down the middle.
I cannot believe that.
Right down the middle, two in a row.
I'd say he almost didn't even see that ball that went so fast. And Buddy has sort of a smug little smile on his face. The crowd doesn't really like that too much. They think it gets the better of him. So do the umpires. But Bill Sankovich knows how to keep him in hand. Here's the pitch. That's a little bit low, and the count is 1-2 on Brian Hasbrook.
You can hear the crowd didn't really like that pitch from Buddy.
So Buddy is still ahead of the batter. And he's getting ready now. And here's the throw, a swing and a miss. And Brian Hasbrook is out.
Well, that's one down at least. Todd Hauslinger will be up next.
just hit away, Buddy. Threw that ball right over his head and caught it with his other hand. Unbelievably agile that man is.
A regular juggler on the pitcher's mound.
I don't know, Brian Flanagan, if you remember last year when Buddy struck out three people in a row. He sprung a handstand right in the middle of the field. That was
true.
Unbelievable.
That's true.
And the fans loved it.
A couple of years ago, I was out in Cincinnati, and I'd seen him turn a cartwheel after winning a league pennant.
He's just that kind of guy. What can you say?
I tell you, Les. Todd Hauslinger is stepping up to the base now.
Todd didn't have a very good year last season. He batted 0-94.
No, not very good at all.
And he made several errors as a right fielder, but he seems to be picking up a little bit this year. I mean, Buddy looks at him, looks behind him, and looks at the crowd. And now he's looking at his watch.
What time is it anyway?
Here's the pitch, and it's low, ball one.
Buddy's almost getting right into the dirt.
Yeah, he has been known after a full game to sort of sink a hole in the middle of the pitcher's mound and actually change the level of the competition because his pitches do become much lower then.
I suppose it's pretty good for some of the shorter players.
That's for sure. Oh, Buddy is looking at Todd Hauslinger again. And Buddy looks at Todd. Todd looks at Buddy. And here's the pitch. Swung on, hit to Steve Broadberg out in right field.
Oh,
he bobbled the ball.
Oh.
That's a certain error on Steve Broadberg. Todd Hauslinger stops at first.
He gets control of the ball, throwing it back to Bob Duffy, second baseman.
Oh, that was a bad play, I have to say, by Steve Broadberg. He usually doesn't make errors like that, but apparently the sun...
He must have been speaking with Lister or something.
It could have been the sun. It's nighttime here. It must have been one of the bright stadium lights. And yes, Steve is gesturing that it was a light. He wants that light turned off. And
it's funny, these lights. Some people complain that they look too much like yellow traffic lights.
That is a common complaint. Bill Slankwich also wants that light turned off. He's complaining to the home plate umpire.
Slankwich talking with Alan the Shellman, lead umpire.
And he's looking up at the light now. He's shielding his eyes, so I guess he thinks it's pretty...
It looks kind of bright. I can see the twinkle in his eyes, even though his eyes are shielded.
Oh, and there it goes. The light's turned off just like that.
Gosh.
The combination of Blyberg and Sankovic have a lot of power.
Well, in any event.
Sue Pfeiffer's up next. And let's see what they're going to do. And Buddy takes the signal from Bill Sankovic. And they're going to put her on.
Why do they do this?
Intentional walk of Sue Pfeiffer.
Sue Pfeiffer is such a powerful hitter, they just don't want to take any chances.
That's for sure, Brian.
Having her bet Todd Hauslinger in, which I'm sure she could do.
And there's ball four, and Sue Pfeiffer is on base. Todd Hauslinger moving over to second.
Barry Reagan's up next. Barry Reagan had an interesting season last year. Had about a 209 average.
But he's taking just a little bit of extra time.
Throwing the ball up in the air a few times.
He knows that there's nothing worse than panicking in the first inning. That's when explosions take place.
What's that? He's taking a yo-yo out of his pocket.
I think the home plate umpire is making some sort of a gesture to him to get that away.
Up gesture.
The crowd doesn't like it either. Okay, Buddy seems to be winding up now. And here's the pitch. And a ground to the third base. Nancy Belushi fields it expertly. And throw to first is in time.
Steve Pfeiffer moves to second base, and Todd Haslanger's now on third.
I tell you that, Nancy Bellucci, she is some damn good fielder.
I'll say. Now, what do you say, Brian? Two runners in scoring position, two men out. What's Bill Sankey's going to call for here?
Well, I don't know. You know, Karen John is a pretty powerful hitter herself.
Karen John got 25 home runs last year.
That's certainly some impressive record.
And she's off to a good start this year,
too. That's true. That's very true.
Well,
let's see what happens.
Buddy is definitely communicating with Bill about something. But it doesn't look like they're going to put her on. I don't know if that would be a good idea at this point to load up the bases, even with two out.
After Karen John, of course, Barbara Bloom will be up. Powerful first base person.
And here's the pitch. It's low, ball one. And Karen has a very aggressive swing. She's a left-handed batter. She has the power to put that thing out of this stadium. It's been done before.
She sure has.
The windup. And the pitch swung on. It's a foul ball. Up into the upper deck.
I tell you.
Behind home plate. That's amazing.
I tell you, it's way up in the peanut gallery there. I bet you some, what was it? It looked like about a 19, about a sixth grader caught that ball, take it home, show his kids.
Well, that's good.
In about 20 years.
Karen gives a lot of balls to the crowd.
She's very generous in that regard.
Buddy winds up, and the pitch. That's almost away again from Gary Pecorino. He hangs on to that remarkably well, but that's, I believe, three pitches that Buddy has thrown over there. Seems to be getting a little bit out of control, but...
Looks like Bill Senekwich down in the dugout there looks a bit worried about what's happening here.
Well, he knows Buddy just like anybody else does, and he always gets a little bit wild, sort of testing the boundaries in the first inning. But then,
like
the fourth inning or so comes up, it's a different story altogether.
Looks like the Vermillion Rupture left fielder Bill Lazaroff is stepping out a little bit there. He's expecting a big hit from Karen John.
All right, let's see what happens here.
Lister's moving about a bit back in center field as well.
Yes. Seems to be a sort of a haze over Lister. I'll have to check that out later on. Sort of a smoky haze. There might be something wrong with that part of the sky or something.
It could be.
Count is two balls, one strike. Here's the pitch. And that's a strike. Karen just watched that one go by.
Yeah, I'm sure if she put her might into that one, she could have knocked that one right over Lister's head.
I believe that was a curveball. It looked like it was almost going to hit her at first, and then it suddenly zipped out in that Buddy Angeletto style and went straight over the base. Here's the windup, and the pitch, that's low, almost in the dirt.
Another ball.
3-2, low count.
3-2.
Buddy winds up.
Strong breeze out of the northwest here.
And the pitch. And that's low again. Ball four. The bases are loaded.
Bags are loaded. What's that now? Bill Senekwich is walking up towards the mound. Joined by Gary Pecorino, the catcher, and Arnie Pritchett, the pitching coach.
And they're going to have a little talk out there. Like I said before, Brian, I don't think Bill's going to do anything drastic at this point. It's only the first inning.
Well, Bill's pointing to the dugout there. Yes.
Well, there hasn't been any score.
I'm not sure if he's going to relieve Buddy this quickly. Who will be coming up next? Could be Mike Girardo. Could be Rochelle Golden. Time will tell, I'm sure.
And he's not going to do anything now. He's going back. Just want a little talk with Buddy.
A little pat on the back there.
And this game's going to resume.
Barbara Bloom's up next. Now, she had a... I tell you, she's a good first base person. Not a bad hitter either. .238 average last year.
They acquired her from the International League.
That's true.
And it was a remarkable investment.
From New Mexico, that's true. She's used to playing in those desert climes. She moves up here to moderately better temperatures, and she does so much better.
And once she gets on base, it's like greased lightning. Buddy winds up. Here's the pitch. And a foul ball popped up. And Gary gets right underneath it and puts it away. The inning is over. And after half an inning, the Dachshunds, nothing. The Beagles coming to bat. Sonnenberg Beagles are up at bat now, facing pitcher Lou Stevens.
Just an idea of the field. Barry Reagan out in left, Karen John center field, Todd Heislinger in right. Sue Pfeffer shortstop. First is Barbara Bloom, second Brian Hasbrook, third Jerry Zuckerman, and then Bobby Gorsuti, the catcher.
And they'll be facing Nancy Belushi. She had an average of 273 last year. Another left-handed batter. With good control. Lou Stevens does his famous windup. I always get a kick out of that. And here's the pitch. And it's a strike. Nancy, just watch that one go by. There's a lot of that tonight.
Must be something in the air.
It's kind of hard to see that ball sometimes when that light's not turned on over home base. But Steve Weiberg got his way. And here's the windup by Lou Stevens. And here's the pitch. And that's low, ball one. So the count is evened up now at 1-1. And Nancy Belushi taking a few of those swings there.
We were talking about the pitcher Buddy Angiulella before, but we really didn't have a chance to talk about Lou Stevens, pitcher for the Dachshunds.
Well, Lou has been with the Dachshunds for 3.5 years now.
We're not going to have much of a chance to talk about him now because he's winding up.
And here's the pitch. Swung on, and that's a foul ball. Out of play.
We're up into the stands there again. This is like it landed in a contingent from Connecticut. Connecticut loves the Beagles.
That's good to know.
Somebody up there caught it.
Here's Stevens quickly into another windup. And here's the pitch, and that's low, ball three.
3-2 now.
Oh, my mistake. That was 2-2. Brian Flanagan, the second ball of the count is evened up at 2-2.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely correct there, Les Huggins.
Here's the windup, and there's ball three. Maybe that was sort of a premonition, huh?
I'll say something like that.
So now
do you believe in astrology?
Count. Do I believe in astrology? At times, Brian. Depends what time of the season it is.
Well, you can certainly see the stars out here tonight.
That's for sure. And a lot of them are on the field.
And Nancy Belushi, she's a really strong hitter. She's not getting much of a chance there tonight.
There's the windup. And the pitch. Swung on, and that's popped up. Popped up to the shortstop.
Sue Pfeffer catches it.
And there's one away. And now Steve Bleiberg is coming up to bat.
Bleiberg, Steve had a good season last year.
The right fielder. Batted 328. Right-handed batter.
I once asked him why he has the number 12. This isn't his favorite number.
Well, that's a good reason. It doesn't always work that way either.
No, they gave it to him. I guess who was number 12 on the Beagles before him?
I think it was Jonathan Billing. I'm not certain about that, though. I don't go back that far.
Maybe it was Dan Farlicky.
Could have been. Well, here's the pitch to Steve Bleiberg, and that is low, ball one. Bleiberg stepping back from the plate for a second.
Well, he steps back. Lou Stevens and Bobby Gorsuter, the catcher, have been a little game of catch.
Bleiberg tying his shoe. Oh, he fell down now trying to tie his shoe. That's kind of the funny movements of Steve Bleiberg.
Maybe that's what happened to him out in right field before. His shoelace might not have been tied, and that could have accounted for his bobbling that ball.
And the light problem as well.
The light as well. Well, I don't think he'd want to say to the people that his shoelace is untied. That's why I dropped it. Now here's the pitch by Lee Stevens. And here's the pitch by Stevens. And that's a foul ball into the left field stands. Which is exactly what they're doing out there.
Looks like one of those kids up there caught it. Got a big smile on his face.
Yep.
TV camera zooming in on him. Hi, Mom, he says.
Moment of a lifetime.
Or two lifetimes.
Possibly.
Maybe three.
I never caught a foul ball, so I guess my lifetime was skipped.
Then again, you may catch one up here. Mark Stern on deck.
And here is the third pitch to Steve Weinberg. And that's way outside. Ball two. Count is now 2-1.
Can't imagine what Lou Stevens was thinking about when he threw that ball.
He almost threw that totally away.
Maybe it'll be an intentional walk again.
Lou Stevens winds up. Here's the pitch. And that's low. Ball three.
Another ball.
Ball three. And Lou Stevens looks a little bit worried there.
Yeah, not to mention Erica Goldstein.
I can imagine. Lou sometimes gets off to bad starts at the beginning of these games. He picks up, but sometimes he doesn't. And it makes for an interesting game sometimes.
Now, if he doesn't pick up, we'll have to get a few people to pick him up.
That's for sure. He looks kind of mad now as he winds up, and here's the pitch, and that's straight down the middle. Steve Leiberg just watched that one go by. He was waiting for the walk, but he didn't get it this time. Count is now full of 3-2.
A lot of full counts tonight's game.
That's the way it is in this league.
Fairly strong offensive and defensive playing. They're doing their best, I'm sure.
Lou looks at the ball.
Looks like he's about to spit on it.
I think he's reading the inscription. It's some of those major league things. The people who make the balls for this league are on strike, so they have to use the major league balls. Interesting story. Anyway, Lou holds up the ball now and goes into his famous windup. And here is the pitch. And another foul ball right into the stands. Steve looking a little bit upset with himself.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. He can keep hitting those foul balls all night.
And he has done it, too. I think he has the all-time record for hitting foul balls
in a single inning. He does.
Yeah?
He does. It was back in, it was in Duluth in 1978,
huh? How many 16, foul balls in the
16
row?
Foul balls in one single inning.
At one time at bat?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Thank you, Brian Flanagan, for that statistic.
I actually have to thank Craig Berger for that statistic.
His team is tossing the ball up in the air now and catching it with his foot. He's a killer sometimes.
I'll say he is.
He doesn't seem to be worried at all. And that's his best attribute.
He's just a happy-go-lucky guy.
The windup. The pitch, and that's low, ball four. And it didn't help him in that case, Brian.
It certainly did not.
Now there is one man on base with one out. And Mark Stern coming up to bat.
Mark had a bit of a problem with the leg a little while back. Seems to be a little bit better. Bill Senekich is starting him tonight.
No doubt if he gets on, though, there will be a pinch runner.
True. His average is about 299. Pretty impressive, I'd say.
Lou surveys Stern very, very carefully.
Just a game of wits.
Here's the windup. And here's the pitch. And straight down the middle.
Okay.
And that went about the speed of that Kahuta Comet. Comet, excuse me.
Kahuta Comet.
Yes.
That isn't like
Kunta Kinte. No. If only Lou Stevens could have done that with Steve Blauberg, we wouldn't have had that person on base. Look at the lead Steve Blauberg was taking, and Lou Stevens cannot believe that. And a throw to first gets back in time. He was almost halfway between first and second.
Lou Stevens has quite a rapport with Barbara Bloom, first baseman. She just whistles at him. He automatically throws the ball back.
Yeah, she has a very good system of telling him when Steve's a little bit too far off. And there, look at that lead he's taking. Here he goes again. And Lou will just keep throwing that ball back until he stays where he's supposed to stay.
I have the statistic here on Steve Blauberg. He's stolen 13 bases in the last 18 games.
And no doubt Lou Stevens knows that. He's keeping an eye on Steve Blauberg, a very close eye on him. Looks like he's going to throw to Mark Stern now. And here is the pitch. And it's lined to first base. Barbara Bloom is right there. Steps on the bag, and we have a double play, and the side is retired. So, after one full inning,
in order,
the Dox Hunts nothing, and the Beagles nothing. We'll be right back. About 2 minutes past the hour of two, you're tuned to WUSB Stony Brook, and you're in the midst of the best of The Voice of Long Island. What we've been listening to was the first inning of the Radio Free Baseball game, originally broadcast sometime over the summer, July, sometime in July or August or something, during the real Major League Baseball strike. And we'll be getting back to the second inning, and hopefully the conclusion of that game, right after we take a look at the latest news. Uncensored reports from Poland say a bulletin circulated in Warsaw by the Solidarity Labor Movement calls on the Polish people to display their intention of fighting the martial law rule. According to the reports, the bulletin was circulated clandestinely, and it urged Poles to follow the example of a factory in which it claimed only one tractor was manufactured in the first week of martial law. The document reportedly says any such action hurts the military regime and helps the church in its negotiations with the government. The church reportedly is negotiating for a political solution to the military crackdown. In Tokyo, foreign ministry officials say Japan will send an envoy to Europe to discuss possible joint action against Poland's martial law authorities. The officials say a Japanese ambassador will visit West European nations next week. The United States has already suspended some commercial ties and credit insurance to Poland. The situation in Poland will be on the agenda of a January 5th meeting between West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt and President Reagan. A spokesman at the German embassy in Washington says the two will also discuss East-West tensions and economic questions and the NATO alliance. The chancellor arrived in the United States Friday with his wife and daughter for a vacation in Florida. Spokesmen say Schmidt intends to rest and go sailing. Another Israeli official has launched a tough attack on the United States. Defense Minister Ariel Sharon is accusing Washington of confronting Soviet expansionism like blind men in a chimney.
And in an interview with an Israeli newspaper, Sharon said United States handling of the Polish crisis shows nothing but impotence. Sharon's comments are the latest in a chain of verbal blasts at the United States, which last week suspended a new strategic cooperation agreement with Israel. The American move followed Israel's annexation of the Golan Heights. In Milwaukee, police were back on the job Friday after a 16-hour wildcat strike. The city says it's taken action to ensure that such a strike does not happen again. A deputy attorney for the city says each policeman will be served individually with a court injunction to return to work. That will enable the city to cite contempt if any officer walks off the job again. A city alderman had triggered the strike with comments about the shooting deaths of two Milwaukee policemen, comments that the police viewed as insensitive. It looks like fans of John Lennon may have to wait a while before they can read one of the biographies of the late Beatles' life. The New York Times reports that $1 million deal for a book on the singer has fallen through. It was written by Albert Goldman, who wrote a controversial book about Elvis Presley. The paper says Goldman's agent had a falling out with Avon Books over publication rights. Right here in Long Island, Stephen Laganis wanted to give his friend sneakers as a Christmas present this year. But corrections officers at the Nassau County Jail foiled his plans when they discovered that pieces of a hacksaw had been embedded in the sole of one of the sneakers. Nassau County police say 17-year-old Laganis, a Kennedy High School student who lives in Massapequa, appeared at the East Meadow facility about 6:30 Christmas Eve with a wrapped present for his friend, David Holmes, who was serving time for an undisclosed crime. Police say when corrections officers checked out the gift, they detected a strong odor of glue from one of the sneakers. Within the sole, police say, were four pieces of a hacksaw. Laganis has been charged with promoting prison contraband felony. Now, taking a look at the USB Long Island weather. 2 degrees in Stony Brook. What is that? That's about 30... Check the chart. I should know these things. 36 Fahrenheit. USB Long Island weather. That's the USB Long Island temperature. The USB Long Island weather is calling for clearing tonight. Lows in the 20s, increasing cloudiness tomorrow, highs in the 40s, rain possibly beginning as snow tomorrow night, lows in the 30s. For Sunday, you can look for cloudy with rain, likely highs in the 40s. And that's the USB Long Island weather. And once again, the USB Long Island temperature, 2 degrees Celsius, 36 degrees Fahrenheit. The USB Long Island time is 2:07. And we're going to take you back to the Radio Free Baseball game.
Back again with the second inning.
I'm Brian Flanagan.
And I'm Les Huggins. And the Dox Hunts are up again.
That's right. Jerry Zuckerman's up first.
Jerry Zuckerman batted .322 last season.
And Buddy Angelello's just having a last-minute warm-up with Gary Pecorino. And Jerry Zuckerman steps up to the plate. And the windup. A strike right down the middle.
Wow, that whistled by. I tell you, Buddy Angelello has not lost his touch one bit. He's been with the league, various teams, for 17 years now. Isn't that amazing?
That's true. He's been around for quite a long time. Another windup and a pitch. Straight down the middle.
What
straight
style?
Down the middle.
What style?
I don't know what's wrong with Jerry.
Well, Jerry's kind of shocked, actually.
She can't believe the speed of these balls.
I don't know if Sherry ever came up against Buddy Angelello before.
That's true. She's new on the team.
She's played a couple of games on the Pacific Coast League.
And the windup. High and outside.
Still very fast, though.
That's true. He's got some speed on his balls.
You know, I hope Buddy doesn't pitch too many fastballs at the start, because he'll sort of lose his touch.
It's all a matter of pacing himself. It's all a matter of pacing.
Here we go.
And the windup, the pitch.
Whoa. Oh my God! Oh, that ball go! Wow!
Over the fence and into the street.
Wow, looks like it almost cracked somebody's windshield out there. Yeah, Jerry Zuckerman, she's rounding the bases.
There's wow. a collection of people at the at home plate waiting for. And here she comes.
Score.
And she's very happy. They're very happy.
Dachshund's one, and the Beagle's nothing.
Well,
I think that's the first home run I've ever seen Jerry Zuckerman hit.
That's true. That's true. She had a 322, though, last year. Looks like she's well on her way to raising that up a bit this year.
I would expect her to have gotten one in her home stadium, but instead she got it in the Beagles' home stadium.
Yeah,
well, that is a surprise, Brian. I wouldn't expect that to happen.
Yes, here at Sound Front Stadium, ladies and gentlemen, you witnessed it.
There's Barbara Gore Suter.
She's up, stepping up to bat.
And she batted 263 last year.
Buddy's loosening up a bit on the mound there.
That's the best season a catcher has ever had. Last year, 263. That's very good.
And the pitch. McKenzie catches it at first. All right.
One out.
Great fielding by Bill McKenzie.
And Barbara goes back to the dugout.
Pitcher Lou Stevens at the offense.
That was, if Phil had not been standing right where he was, that would have gone out into right field, and that could have gone for as much as a double. Maybe even a triple, the way Blyberg's been bobbling things up.
Yeah, but I saw Blyberg running in for that one.
He was ready.
Lou Stevens steps up to the plate. Buddy Angiolillo and Lou Stevens exchanging grimaces.
Two pitchers confronting each other.
And the pitch. Low ball.
That's a ball. Yes. I thought that was going to be a strike, but I guess it wasn't.
So a little bit too low.
Lou batted 163 last season, which is actually, I guess, what you can expect for a pitcher.
That's true. Again, Buddy Angiolillo, a little bit tight. Seems just loosening up his bones a bit.
And the crowd's getting on him a little bit.
What he probably needs is a masseuse to get on him. And the windup, the pitch. Ooh, straight out to Mark Stern. Mark Stern catches it, throws it to Bill McKenzie, and he's out.
That's two away, two quick ones.
Mark Stern.
Shortstop. Mark Stern is especially good on those double plays, but he does get a good throw to Barbara Bloom now and then, too.
Well, Brian Hasbrook's up next.
Up again. He's 0 for 1.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
He struck out in the first inning, I believe.
That's what happened first. And the windup, the pitch.
That's low.
Oh, too low.
Very low.
Too low. So your buddy has this problem sometimes as he pitches just a little bit too low.
I think he knows it too, and certainly Bill Sankovich knows it.
Alan the showman wants to look at that ball. Apparently he doesn't like it. Throws back another one out to Buddy Angiolillo.
And he throws the old one into the crowd to a fan, isn't it? Not many umpires would do something like
that's
that.
That's true. Alan, the showman, is known for being kind to the viewing audience.
That reminds me of something Reggie Jackson did in the 1973 World Series against the Mets. He would always throw whenever he caught them, just because he was so happy to be there and he wanted to share it with the fans.
Sure was. The pitch. Ooh. Straight down the middle. Brian Hasbrook doesn't even have a chance to see it.
I guess Alan, the showman, is happy to be here, too. As I know I am. How about you, Brian Flanagan?
Me too, Les Huggins. Okay, and the windup. The pitch. Oh,
that would have been out of here.
Oh, that right up into the top level.
That was very close.
Yes,
very close, Brian.
It was.
The count is now one ball and two strikes.
He's got himself another ball now. It's funny that he should just throw that one ball in. It's one pitch. And the windup. Whoa! And Lister's underneath.
Lister catches it.
The side is retired.
See the smoke that rose up from there. Lister will be up first next time.
Well, we're at the end of 1.5 innings.
Score is the Dachshunds 1 and the Beagles nothing. Beagles coming to bat.
We'll be back after this.
Back again for the second half of the second inning. Lister, Hugh, and O will be leading off for the Beagles.
And us and Brian Evan flipping through my little handbook here, and I noticed something of interest that finds every single one of these players together. They all seem to have worked at one time on a particular college radio station called WUSB in Stony Brook. Interesting little side note there.
I've noticed that too. It's interesting to note also that the Dachshunds have also worked there in news and public
affairs.
Safety or public affairs or public
I've
safety.
Noticed the same thing, and the Beagles were all in the music department. Very, very interesting.
Very interesting. Anyhow, Lister, Hugh, and Lowe is up
for the Beagles.
That's true. Facing Lou Stevens. And the pitch.
I think he would have been on base even if he hadn't bobbled that.
Yes, Lister makes it to first.
And it's and not an error. Not an error in Karen Jones.
Well, Bill McKenzie's coming up.
That's good that Karen Jones doesn't feel too badly about that because she doesn't make mistakes like that too often.
Bill McKenzie, interestingly enough, had an average last year of 364. Lister had an average of 346.
Whoa.
Bill McKenzie, number 27. Well, anyhow, Lou Stevens winding up the pitch. Strike.
That was a mean pitch.
Yeah, one of those interesting curveballs of Lou Stevens.
I don't know if McKenzie believed that was a strike. He looks kind of baffled. He's sort of shaking his head and looking up at the sky.
He's having some polite dialogue there with Alan, the showman, the chief home plate umpire there.
Oh, I never saw that gesture before from an umpire. I wonder what that meant.
Hmm. And the windup. Ooh. Lower left outside.
A little bit of debate on that one. I think some of the fans thought that was a good pitch.
Well, so, then they're even. The last one they thought was a bad pitch.
That's true.
Well,
so it evens out.
It counts 1-1. Bill McKenzie up at bat.
The Dachshunds do have a few fans here. So that's amazing. They do seem to be hanging out.
They did travel all the way from Stony Brook, remember?
Well, this is the Stony Brook series, the Campus Bus series, as we mentioned before.
Right. And Lou Stevens with the windup. The pitch.
Almost in the exact same place. Unbelievable.
Just about.
2-1.
A complete carbon copy of that last pitch.
And Lister's not taking too much of a lead off first base. In fact, he's talking to the first base coach, and he didn't even seem to be watching Bill McKenzie as he took the pitch.
Yes, he is talking to Scott Boyington over there on the first base line.
They're smoking something. I guess that gets his concentration up.
That's true.
Well, Lou is winding up one more time.
And the pitch.
Swung on, foul ball right into the third base side. That had some power on it.
It did.
Ball.
It sure did. And spinning around. Lou Stevens looks like he's a bit nervous. Bill McKenzie is really a power hitter.
He's got an even count right now, 2-2. Lou looks a little bit mad, if to say anything.
That's true. And here comes the pitch.
Whoa!
Pitch.
And Lister goes on to second, and he's going to stop right there.
Oh, boy.
Barbara Gorosuga did a good job chasing down that ball to prevent Lister from going on to third base.
Yes.
And she holds him right there at second.
It looks like there's going to be a little conference out on the mound there.
Here comes Erica Goldstein.
And pitching coach Jane Goldberg talking with Lou Stevens.
That pitch really got away from Lou Stevens. No question about it.
Now, it looks like they're about done talking. Looks like Lou's going to stay there for a while.
And look at Bill McKenzie just standing there with his hands on his hips looking at Lou Stevens. I don't know if he thought that was intentional or just bad pitching.
Just about.
Lou has been known to give the old beanball at times.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it looks like they're about ready to resume play.
There goes Erica back into the dugout.
Okay, and
Lou's
and the pitch. Wow, another strike.
And that's strike three.
That strikes out Bill McKenzie.
And Bill seems to be, I can't hear what he's saying, but he's definitely muttering something as he walks back to the dugout.
That's not a good thing to do for Bill McKenzie.
Well, he went through a lot out there just now. He almost got his pants knocked off with
that ball. That's true, but a bit nervous and probably shaken up he is. Well, Bob Duffy's up there.
There's one out now, and Lister's on second base, scoring position.
Bob Duffy, number 96. I once asked him why he had the number 96. He says, just in case he puts his shirt on upside down, it reads the same thing.
That's Bob Duffy for you.
I'll tell you. And the windup, the pitch.
It's deep to left field.
Thurhagen catches it for the out.
And Lister tagging up.
Lister makes it to third, and he's safe.
Oh, that was close. That was very close. And Erica Goldstein is out there arguing vehemently.
Oh,
that
was
extremely close.
Now, this was talking with third base coach Charlie Backfish.
Did you see Barry Reagan threw that ball to Jerry Zuckerman, and this just sort of slid in hand over heels.
Or ass over tea kettles or something like that.
And it went right underneath.
He just made it. Let's look at the videotape. No, let's not until you did. Don't have time. Bill Lazaroff coming up to the plate.
Wow. We have a runner on third base now with two men out. What can Bill Lazaroff do?
Well, we'll find out in just a few minutes. And the windup. The pitch to Bill Lazaroff.
Oh, that's a foul ball.
Foul ball.
All the way through, that was foul. Oh, just came down from the upper level. Plant had his hand on it, and he let it go, and it went right over.
It's like a little scramble in the stands there.
I just saw a hot dog
vendor caught it.
I just saw some hot dogs go flying. That was funny.
I tell you.
All right. Dropped all of his hot dogs, but he got that baseball, and that's the important thing.
That's true.
And I'll attest to that.
So they're bringing home the bacon. He's bringing home the balls. And the windup to Lazaroff. The pitch.
Base hit.
Oh, right through the legs of Sue Pfeffer.
And Lister scores.
Lister scores. It was 1-1.
We have a tie ball game here.
Barry Reagan throws it to first. Lazaroff.
Runner now on first base.
Bill Lazaroff on first. Gary Pecorino is facing Lou Stevens.
Two men out. Bottom of the second inning.
And the windup. The pitch to Gary Pecorino. Swing! Oh!
That's foul.
Just barely foul. But into the stands.
Gary has some power in that swing of his. I think he's looking to hit it out of here.
I'll say he is. I wouldn't be surprised if he does.
He's hit a few of them out here, too. Last season, I believe he had 14 home runs in this stadium alone.
And for a catcher with an average of .318 for the Beagles, that's damn good.
Also.
Gary Pecorino, number 37. Next pitch.
Hit deep to left field.
Way out in the stands.
Over the stands.
Into the parking lot.
That was a long ball.
Oh, if he had just been a little bit,
foul.
If he had just been a little bit more to the right, that would have definitely been a home run for Gary Pecorino.
He is looking to hit out of here, no question about it.
No question about it. I think they all are tonight, Les. Okay, the pitch. Oh!
That was in the dirt.
It's just a little bit too low that time around.
Lou Stevens seems to be getting a little bit frustrated out there. All those long balls and base hits and errors.
One ball, two strikes. The windup. The pitch. Ooh, that curveball just curved a little bit too much.
Even count, 2-2.
2-2.
We're all tied up here at 1. Gary Pecorino up.
Bill Lazaroff on first base.
2 men out.
And the pitch.
Deep.
Oh, landing the bullpen. All right.
That's out of here. Gary Pecorino.
Pushing in Bill Lazaroff.
Rounding the bases. A two-run homer from Gary Pecorino. And that puts the Beagles up on top by a score of 3-1.
It's the Beagles 3, the Dachshunds 1.
Back again for the third inning between the Dachshunds and the Beagles. Dachshunds are up at bat in this inning. And it will be Todd Hauslinger.
Last time around, he had a single.
He's 1-for-1. He's facing Buddy Angiulo. Here's the windup by Buddy. And the pitch. A swing and a miss. And the count is 0-1 on Todd Hauslinger.
0-1. I could almost feel the breeze.
He swung hard on that one. He wants to hit it. Here's Buddy with the windup and the pitch. And that's low. So the count is evened up at 1-1.
Buddy has a tendency to throw a little low.
Actually, Buddy has a tendency to throw just about everywhere on occasion.
But nobody argues with Buddy.
Here's the windup. And the pitch. And it's low again.
Another ball.
Almost the same spot.
And another ball.
And the count is now 2-1.
Hauslinger, number 98.5, plays right field. Last year had an average of 94. Not too good.
Well, his season seems to be a little bit better this year. And Lisco Hewinlo is calling time in center field. See what this is about.
I saw that smoke hanging out there, too.
I think that's why he's calling time. He's clearing away some of that smog or whatever has developed around
him. It's like some kind of a haze or a fog out there.
So, wiping that away with his fingers. All right, things seem to have cleared up now, and we're back in the progress. Wind up by Buddy Angiulo, and the pitch. And Todd Hauslinger took that one.
Great pitch, though.
2-2 is now the count. Pecorino throws the ball back to Buddy. And Buddy's ready right away, and here is the pitch. Swung on, foul ball, way up into the stands. Holy cow, look at that ball. And here it comes again, coming down. Oh, everyone's missing it. Right over the upper deck, down to the mezzanine. Down again into the field seats. Unbelievable.
Simply unbelievable. Hauslinger has a bit of power behind him as well.
Unfortunately, though, it goes up instead of away.
Mm.
That ball must have gone a couple hundred feet up into the air. Angiulo now with the windup. And the throw. Swing and a miss. Todd Hauslinger goes down swinging.
Sue Pepper be it.
But he seems very happy about that. Another strikeout for him.
He's patting himself on his back. But he threw his glove down. Now he's holding himself. He's embracing himself, and the crowd is going wild over these.
What a sense of humor that guy has. The fans love him. Sue Pepper walked in the first inning.
Facing Buddy Angelello again.
Sue batted 197 last year. And she looks like she's ready to do some justice to this ball. Here's the pitch. Low, ball one. But it's just a trifle bit upset. She walks back to the mound. Says something to the second baseman.
Bob Duffy.
And turns around again. Here's the windup. And the pitch right down the middle, and Sue didn't even see that one.
That's that really fast fastball of Buddy Angelello.
He does not lose that throughout the course of the game. You always see that at least once in the inning. And Sue, well, she didn't see it. Problem is, though, Brian, when you hit that kind of a ball, it goes very far.
It does, Les.
The thing is, though, it's very, very hard to hit a ball like that.
That's what Buddy hopes for, at least.
And the windup. And the pitch. Swung on. Popped up.
Straight up.
Gary Pecorino is underneath it. Throws down the mask. And he's got it. Sue Pepper is out. Two away.
Two down. Barry Reagan.
Gary was ready for that one. Barry Reagan's up again. He was 0 for 1.
Barry Reagan, number 1.
But he steps off the mound for a second.
Looks like he's adjusting his socks there.
Seems satisfied he's stepping back. He gives a warning look at first base, even though nobody's out on there. That's Buddy for you. He still looks over his shoulder. That's amazing.
Never gives up.
That's good practice, I guess.
From the day go.
Here's the pitch to Reagan. And that's a foul ball right into the field seats. That grazed a few heads, I think. Reagan takes a couple of practice swings.
Looks like he's calling for another bat. Yes, he's switching bats. Looks like he's getting one of those heavier ones with the hollow tip.
Well, it's a 209 average. Reagan should be hitting the ball better than he has been doing this season. However, he seems to have fallen upon hard times. We'll see what happens. Here's the pitch. And that's a way off. Almost got away from Pecorino there.
It was pretty high.
So the count is evened up at 1-1.
Buddy has the ball again.
Wind up. And the pitch low and away. Ball two.
Two balls, one strike.
But he's getting ready now. He looks very, very mean. If I was behind that plate, I'd be kind of frightened right now. Here's the pitch. Right down the middle. There's another one of those. Unbelievable. Sue Pfeiffer got one, and now Barry Reagan got another one.
It's that really fast fastball of Buddy Angelello we've been telling you all about.
The count is evened up at 2-2.
What's this Reagan's doing with his pants? Oh, that's what he's adjusting his belt.
Here's the pitch from Buddy Angelello. A swung on hit deep to center field, and Lister can't get it.
Lister
runs after it. He's got it. He's throwing it into Bill McKenzie.
But Barry made it to second. He's safe.
Two-way. Reagan slides into second base. He's safe.
Bob definitely had a chance with the ball.
And I think if Lister had thrown that to Bob Duffy instead of to Bill McKenzie, he would have had a good shot at it. Unfortunately, though, he made the wrong decision. It's not, I would say, an error, but it's just a split-second judgment, and unfortunately, he just went the wrong way. He didn't seem to be able to see that ball there. That haze is still there.
By the way, Les, did you know that in the audience tonight, the Commissioner of Baseball, Norman Preslin, is in the audience?
Is he? Well, that's very heartening to hear that.
Yes, it is.
He's seeing a good contest like this. So a runner on second base.
Karen Johns up now. She walked the last time up the bunk.
Two men out. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed. And Karen really looks like she wants to wail that one out of here.
Remember all last season, she had 25 home runs.
25 homers. And she wants to
get
another 25 this year.
That's for sure.
Wind up and the pitch. And that's inside. Oh, almost hit her with that one. 1-1. But you're looking back at second base now. Reagan takes a moderate lead.
It's getting a bit breezy outside, don't you think, Les?
Yes, it is.
Some clouds are rolling in.
A few clouds. But it's not darkening the spirits of the fans or the players.
And no, not since they have these quartz halogen lights out.
Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed again. Karen John has two strikes and a ball. She walked earlier on. I believe that was an intentional walk. Or was that? No. Sue Pfeiffer was the intentional walk in that inning, the first inning. And Karen John was walked after that to load up the bases.
Right.
Created quite a tense situation.
You're right.
The pitch from Mangiello. And there's a foul ball into the stands.
Well, Les Huggins, how long have you been announcing baseball?
Well, about 25 years now.
So then you've
moved around from all different
leagues. You've seen quite a bit.
I have. These two Stonebrook teams, though, are something else. And I think in the coming years, you're going to see some excitement from these guys that you've never seen before.
Especially here at this brand new Soundfront Stadium that the Beagles had built.
And once they get the seats installed, it'll be a tremendous place to take the family to. Here's the pitch, and that's low and inside.
And ball two.
Two
balls, two strikes. I recall up in Maine in the Loggers League, I was announcing a game. And we had similar conditions to this. All of a sudden, the crowds just started rolling in.
They do seem to be rolling in kind of fast.
This was way back in 1947. For some reason, I feel exactly as I did back then.
And it almost got away from Pecorino again, and Buddy does seem to be getting a little bit wild out there.
Three balls and two strikes.
And Bill Sankovich is casting a kind of concerned look at Buddy.
Yes, he's putting Rochelle Goldman up in the bullpen.
He just telephoned over there, I believe. Yes, Rochelle is starting to pitch.
Yes, she took her jacket off. He's fancy touching the bullpen there.
But he doesn't appear to be worried. Here's the pitch, and that's low and outside, ball four. And Karen John is on. So we have a runner on first and a runner on second with two men out.
One out. Well, actually, one man and one woman out.
Yes, if you want to be technical.
Barbara Bloom was up there. Last time round, she popped out. Stepping up to the bag now.
Well, Buddy is a bit concerned at this point. He doesn't want that 3-1 lead to be chipped away at by the Dachshunds. And Barbara Bloom is just the person to do it. She popped out earlier, but that's not typical at all.
No, not at all. Had a 2.38 average last year.
But he was about to throw the ball, but changed his mind. It was almost a balk, I would think. No one's saying anything.
I'll never tell.
Here's the pitch from Buddy. A swing and a miss. And what power Barbara Bloom had in that swing. I can almost feel the breeze.
What power, what power.
Wind up. And the pitch, that's outside. One and one. Are you guys ready? Here it comes. Another swing and a miss.
Two balls.
I'll tell you, Brian.
Two strikes and one ball.
Two strikes and one ball. Brian, she is aiming to hit it out of this planet, I think.
She sure is.
Here's the throw from Buddy. Right down the middle. She had no chance at that one.
The side
is retired.
So that's the end of two and a half. Three and a half. No, two and a half.
Two and a half innings. It's the Beagles 3 and the Dachshunds 1.
Again for the second half of the third inning. The Beagles are up at bat.
Nancy Belushi will be at the plate.
And the pitch. Ball. Off to the side too much.
Steven steps back. Oh, he almost falls back.
Oh.
Close call there.
He winds up. And the pitch. It's a strike. Whoa, what a whiff Nancy had that time. You know, she's 0 for 1.
We'll see what happens. As Stevens picks the ball up.
Yes.
It's a dropping it.
And the pitch, another ball, low.
2-1. Nancy Belushi batting .273, number 66, third base.
And Lee Stevens getting ready to pitch again. And the pitch. Oh. Hit to left center. Barry Reagan, Karen John.
Oh!
Oh, they slam into one another.
What happened to the ball?
The ball's lost. And Nancy pulls into second base.
And, oh,
safe. And has no chance to get her. No chance at all.
Safe at second.
Well, yeah. That was certainly bad planning on part of both Barry Reagan and Karen John.
And they run right into one another.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Well, it looks like a little conference on the mound there. What is it? Erica Goldstein? She says... Doug Edelson's coming in for Lou Stevens as pitcher.
So Erica Goldstein has made a change here in the bottom half of the third inning. As Lou Stevens seems to be giving away a little bit too much to the Beagles.
Just a little bit too much.
So Doug Edelson will be pitching.
He's being driven in that little sports car from the bullpen.
It's really racing across there, too. He's been doing about 65 miles an hour.
I guess they're in a hurry. Look at the clouds.
Yeah, I can see why. It's, in fact, there are a couple of raindrops falling down right now, and Bill Stankovic is kind of upset because, as you know, Brian, this is not an official ball game yet, and he is ahead 3-1.
That's absolutely true. Well, Doug Edelson's doing some warm-ups right now.
He got in there fast, and Lee Stevens is already in the showers.
Doug Edelson, Barbara Gore Suter playing a little game of catch.
I think he's ready already.
Sure looks it.
That's be the fastest I've ever seen a pitcher warm up.
Steve Blyberg is up.
At the plate.
As you know, he was walked last time up. And one more warm up.
Edelson looks sharp.
He does. And he's winding up. The pitch. Whoa. Boy, that was a slow ball.
That foul ball almost chopped the head off the third base coach over there.
Well, landed up in the stands there.
Yeah, right over
just
the roof
about,
of the dugout.
Just about in the stands there.
Bounced over. The mezzanine.
One strike. Steve Bleiberg. And the windup. The pitch. Oh, what a whip. Oh. Steve Bleiberg gets caught in by a Doug Edelson fastball.
Never had a chance. No. Never.
Back to Doug.
Doug looks very strong.
Checking out Barbara Gore Suter for a signal.
He gets one.
And a curveball outside. Two strikes, one ball. Wind's starting to pick up a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, and those clouds don't look too good coming in from the west.
No, they don't.
The crowd seems to sense that.
Doug Edelson winding up the pitch. Oh, right between first
base
and second
hit.
Base. Oh, a single for Steve Bleiberg.
And Nancy Belushi goes to third base on the play.
Nancy's talking with third base coach Priscilla Verant.
She takes a big lead off third, and Doug Edelson does not like that at all.
Mark Stern's up next. And you know Mark Stern's batting lefty tonight.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he is. That's why he's on the other side of the base.
I see.
And the windup, the pitch. Straight to Sue Pepper! Oh, what a great catch!
Steve she was Bleiberg. Right there. She was ready for that.
Steve Bleiberg still on first. Nancy Bellucci on third.
One out now.
Lister's up. What are they going to do with Lister? You know, he had a base hit last time. He's a powerful hitter.
He certainly is. It's kind of hard to see the strike zone, though, whenever he's up.
Signals.
Smog seemed to follow him.
Look at that pitch. Whoa, outside. Looks like they're going to walk Lister.
I think they're going to put him on. They don't want to see a repeat.
That one hit the ground. Yes, they're definitely walking Lister.
Edelson's throwing some crazy pitches there for intentional walks. He just might throw a wild one.
Ball three.
That's ball four. Just rolled it down like a bowling ball.
Oh, now look who's up now. Bill Lazaroff.
Bill Lazaroff.
Change in the order here. When he was up first time, he was one for one. He batted in Lister.
Okay, let's see what he does this time.
The pitch. Oh, single.
Base hit.
All right.
And Lazaroff is on.
Nancy
Belushi
comes home.
Scores now 4-1 Beagles, and things are starting to look very good for the Beagles. And that brings up Gary Pecorino.
Gary had a home run last time, last inning, whatever. And Doug Edelson's looking a bit concerned. The pitch. Oh, foul ball. Bounces just the other side over the third baseline. Can't get to it in time.
That almost hit the ball goal that time.
Sure did. And the pitch. Swing and a miss. Oh, beautiful pitch, too. What happened there?
I don't know. Gary should have hit that ball.
He sure should have. And the crowd is getting restless here. It's starting to rain.
It is starting to rain. And the umbrellas are going up.
Wind up the pitch. Oh, low and outside.
Oh, boy. And the crowd's starting to run for cover. And members of the Dachshunds are sort of pointing up to the sky and gesturing to the umpires.
Oh, and Bill Senequich.
Bill Senequich is standing on the dugout with his hands on his hips, and he looks like he's ready to kill somebody if they suggest calling this game.
The umpires are getting together. Alan the Showman, Bunky and Spunky, Ray Ferrugio, the whole umpire crew.
Remember, this is not an official ball game yet.
They're canceling the game.
They decided to call it. Oh, and Bill Sankovic is furious. He's running out there.
Down.
He just splashed water on Alan the Showman. Oh, it's quite a scene out there. Some of the fans are jumping onto the field now. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, there's mud all over the place.
And a fight has broken out in center field between, it looks like, members of the same team. I don't understand what's happening here. It looks like a riot is about to break out.
Oh.
So there you have it. That's the Radio Free Baseball game that occurred this summer during the Major League Baseball strike. Well, we're running kind of late tonight. We still do have Deborah Bird. Deborah Bird's interview runs for a while. And Bill Senequich, incidentally, is coming up right after the Deborah Bird interview. So let's see. I'm Mike Uhas. Eric is taking care of some of his business today, and he'll be back next week. I won't be, and we're going to give you the Deborah Bird interview, and right after that, Bill Senequich will certainly be up, and you are tuned to WUSB Stony Brook.
Well, Radio Free Long Island, in celebration of the launching of the space shuttle earlier today, is pleased to announce that we have on the phone with us right now Deborah Bird, who writes the program Stardate, which you can hear every night at midnight and every afternoon at 5:58 here on WUSB. And Deborah, what are your feelings on the space program as it stands today?
Oh, well, for one thing, I'm really happy about it. I'm tremendously pleased. It's been a long wait, and everything looks great. And, you know, I just couldn't be happier. I'm sure that my feelings are shared by almost everyone in the country.
It has been a long time since the Apollo missions, a good, 6 or 7 years since we sent the man up into space. And do you think this is going to lead to more expeditions, say, to Mars and other planets, maybe the moon again?
Well, there aren't any manned missions in the works at the moment, other than the shuttle. Like, there are no missions to Mars planned or anything like that. But it's definitely my feeling that man will be going into space. And as the years pass, I think that people will realize more and more that space is out there for us to go into. And when that happens, I think that those kinds of things will definitely take place. You know, at the moment, it really seems as though the space program is suffering from some kind of it's in a slump for sure. Like, the amount of money that NASA gets seems to get smaller and smaller. And to my way of thinking, that's really sad. But I can't help but think that won't last forever because, space is...
Space is the place.
Yeah, space is the place. That's right. It's out there. It's a new frontier, and everyone kind of feels that in their gut now, I think. It's evidenced by Star Wars and by Stardate itself, by the popularity of Stardate.
How did you get started with Stardate?
Well, Stardate actually started as a telephone service, believe it or not. Someone got the idea that it would be neat if the people in Austin, which is where we are, could call on the telephone and hear a little message on astronomy. And that was about 5 years ago, I guess. So a local radio station, KLBJ, here in Austin, the program director from there began calling us, and he liked the messages, and he said, well, let's put them on the radio and see how it works. So we did that for a while, and it proved to be, a popular program. And we decided to try to syndicate it. So now Stardate is heard on a number of radio stations around the country, and we're happy with it. We're really happy with the way things are going, but I think that what, you know, the reason things are going so well is because of our subject matter, the subject of astronomy and space. It's really, people love astronomy. It's really a subject that people can relate to.
Were you involved with it from day one?
Oh, yeah. I wrote those first telephone messages, and I'm still writing it. I've always been the only writer.
Is it very hard to come up with topics, or is it just so much out there that you never run out?
Well, I really, it's, astronomy is in a golden age now. For example, when we first started the program, I can look back at the scripts that I first wrote, and I said things like, you know, Saturn has three rings called the A, B, and C rings. And I mean, now, you know, for Saturn, that's just ancient history. Now, Saturn is known to have hundreds of rings. You know, our spacecraft has been by Saturn, and that's true in almost everything in astronomy. It's changing so fast. So in terms of topics, it's just such a, you know, there's so much happening in astronomy that I can't even conceive of running out of topics. And then, of course, there's the sky. You know, the sky is up there for everyone, and you know, it's got all different things are happening in the sky all the time, and so that's ever-changing, too. So in terms of topics, you know, I'm never at a loss for topics. It's amazing.
About how many radio stations is your Stardate heard on?
I think at last count it was something like 114.
Boy.
But that's, our situation has changed since last year because we, you know, up until January 4th of this year, we were funded by the National Science Foundation, and we were able to give the program away free to radio stations. Well, now stations have to pay for it, and when we were giving it away free, we had more like 1,000 radio stations, and, you know, a lot of people heard Stardate, and that was great.
Is that a result of federal budget cuts that you have to charge for it now?
Yes and no. The National Science Foundation makes it a policy not to give grants for more than 1 year.
Oh.
So they had already given us 2 years' worth of grants, and we didn't even apply for another grant this year. But strangely enough, they called us up and said, hey, thank you guys are, you know, when we did manage to stay on the air after January 4th, they called us up and said, hey, we want to give you guys some more money. And then a week later, they called us back and said, well, because of the budget cuts, forget it. We're not going to give you any more money.
Now, these budget cuts, as long as we're on the subject, don't seem to indicate a sort of negative attitude towards science and the space program. Do you think that with the space shuttle and everything, you think we can survive that and perhaps do more things in the future?
Well, it's, you know, it's a complicated question, even in my mind, because it seems as though the Reagan administration is really pushing the military. You know, they seem to be willing to give money to the military, and my understanding is that the shuttle is going to be used by the military. And it's, you know, so as to how much money is going to actually be going into the space program, it's confusing to me, at least, because, you know, you can't, I guess it's going to be determined by how much the military does begin going into space.
Well, you know, it's interesting that now we're on the topic of the military. I read an article two Sundays ago in the New York Times that mentioned that the launching of the space shuttle would start a whole new series of military ventures. In other words, the space shuttle could be used for military purposes. Have you ever heard anything like that? And if so, what do you think about it?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely heard it. It's definitely true that for example, I've heard that the Russians are also developing a shuttle, and theirs is slightly different from ours because it's my understanding that theirs can take off from a runway as well as land on a runway as our shuttle can do. And, of course, that's, you know, a distinct military advantage because if, you know, if our launch site gets blown up, for example, the shuttle couldn't take off. You know,
true.
Whereas the Russian shuttle could take off from any runway, so they're, you know, they're in much better shape from a military standpoint.
I think they were referring, though, to dropping bombs from a shuttle or just looking at what they're doing and things like that. And it's kind of ironic, I guess, because if they look at it from that point of view, it may get more funding.
Right. Well, it's sad in a way that the space program maybe is going to have to depend on the military to survive. But I think people are going to realize, as we do go into space more, that war is really obsolete nowadays. I mean, global war at any rate. I mean, we can blow our...